Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. Everybody, I'm your host Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. I hope everybody had a great New Year's, and hope whatever your New Year's resolution is going to be, hope you stick to it. I know I never do, but at least I try for the first month, you know. But I tell you what, man, back on July 3rd, 2007 on ESPN, there was a really short segment which was called MMA versus Boxing. You had Joe Rogan, the comedian and the commentator for the UFC affiliation, going against Lou DiBella, promoter of Sergio Martinez, Matthew Macklin, Andy Lee, and Andre Berto. And they had a little bit of the debate. Joe Rogan stating that boxing is pretty much done and over with. It's going to be extinct. You know, the last of the big names like Bernard Hopkins and Oscar De La Hoya and Jermaine Taylor, as soon as they were out the door, then boxing wasn't going to have any other stars rising to the top and carry us up the hill that, you know, we've been struggling to stay on, you know, king of the hill. And look, I don't know, 4 years down the line, five years down the line, guess what? We're still here, and we're going pretty strong. I think our punches have made a lot of thump into the combat world here, Gabriel. I don't know what your thoughts about that, but I'm kind of happy because in that 2000 segment on ESPN, you know, for a minute, it made you wonder, could MMA, the UFC, take over? Because it was such a high rise of viewers logging on to watch this newly sport that now it's 5 years older than it's young when it came out. You're sitting back and you're seeing it kind of simmer down a little bit, and you're still seeing boxing still on that lifeboat and floating pretty good at it, you know?
Yeah, I think at this point that conversation is at a point where we just got to accept that it's two different sports, and they just exist. You know, they coexist, and they do it just fine. When you look at the sport of MMA is so young that you can't look at all the problems that it has or doesn't have and apply it to boxing. They're just two separate things. We have such a long history of being corrupt and being kind of fractured and unorganized. MMA had the benefit of that. They had the benefit of looking at us and designing themselves around that or away from that into a different product. But they got their own problems. They're a bit of a monopoly. We'll see how long that lasts. I mean, competition is usually what pushes something forward. Monopoly can turn something into complacency. And I think you see that a little bit with Top Rank, and that they have a kind of a monopoly on the big superstars in the sport. Floyd Mayweather's a free agent, but after that, it kind of drops off in terms of the promotional machine behind fighters. And Top Rank can fall into a situation like, you know, Bob Arum, like he doesn't really give a shit what you think, what fights, you know, the fans really want to see. For him, it's the fights that he thinks you'll think are entertaining, but at the same time benefit him financially. And I think there's a little bit of complacency in that because he's been building his own draws and his A side and his B side. But because of that, you know, he can sit there and say, well, I'm going to do what I want. But it doesn't really push him to have the best fights. And I don't necessarily think they always do. At the same time, you look at the Golden Boy, and they think kind of short term. And they'll give us, I was thinking of them as kind of like an insecure teenage girl. They want to please us so much, and so they'll give us whatever we want, you know. And they'll give us Angulo versus Kirkland about a year or so before it really should have happened. They gave us Ortiz Maidana before that fight really should have happened. They want boxing fans to like them a lot. And so they make these mistakes based on that. And in the long term, they're going to hurt. I don't really have that debate anymore, the MMA versus boxing debate.
I bring up this whole it's not even in debate. I just bring up the whole, you know, subject of that Joe Rogan because, you know, just this past week on Saturday night on New Year's Eve, you know, went to a family party. And, you know, it's funny that you still have people that do still bring up the MMA versus boxing. And that was one of the references that was thrown at me at one of the participants in the party, thinking that, you know, well, you know, boxing, it's really on the way out. And I kind of just rephrased that. I said, this is 5 years ago. This bait has basically been running for the past 5 years. And guess what? It's boxing's still in the same exact category where it's been at for a very long time. It's the borderline of whether you hate it or you love it. There is no in-between. You're either going to love our sport or you're not going to watch our sport. Is it big in the States? No, it's not. And it hasn't been for a very, very long time. You know, just like past week, show we talked a little bit about Andre Ward. Is he going to be a mega superstar here in the States? No, probably not. But let's think back for the past 5 years or 10 years or even possibly 15 years. Have there been an American that's carried the sport of boxing on their shoulder? Exile Oscar De La Hoya, who did it for a period of time. But other than that, we haven't really seen an American. Even guys that are Olympians that came out of the Olympics did not carry the sport of boxing. It's been a very long time that, in a lot of ways, now it's somebody that's overseas that's carried the sport of boxing, that's really got it to have that crossover feel. You know, the UK fans are a different breed of fans. You know, the Mexican fans are a different breed of fans, and the Puerto Rican and Filipinos and et cetera. Those are all extreme fans that if you go to an event and if it's headlined by either one of those nationalities, you're gonna feel the liveliness of it. You know, we're an American event. Go to a Birdo, and guess what? You're going to hear the crickets in the crowd.
Well, that's the thing. You know, these guys got to be built right, you know, and it is frustrating. You know, we talked a lot about this in our final show of the year, you know, how to promote a guy correctly. And even look at the fight that it was interesting. I was talking to somebody about the Showtime HBO thing and how it's now shifting, where Golden Boy suddenly doing a lot of Showtime shows, and Heyman fighters are kind of moving on over to Showtime a bit. And, you know, Showtime outbid HBO. It's probably the first time I can think of in a long time, by $100,000 past what the original fight cost for Ortiz and Berto to put it on Showtime. But, you know, it's going to be in Vegas, and I'm not sure either of those guys are going to draw very well there. I'm really curious to see how that fight does.
Yeah.
I want it to do well. You know, it's a good fight. It should do well. But I imagine it's going to be another show that's going to do a lot of comps, and I expected them to kind of move out of there. But at the same time, I don't know if the Mexicans really, if you put it in Southern California, would they go and show up for Victor Ortiz? Is it,
I don't think, you know what, honestly, ever since that turn of him saying, you know, I don't deserve this, I'm still young, I don't deserve being punched in the face, and waving his head, you know, I mean, waving his hand and nodding his head against, you know, towards the canvas when Madonna was clearly just landing the bigger, harder punches and busting up his face, where that really turned off a lot of Latino fans. Not just Mexican fans, but a lot of Latino fans, where they really cringe at anybody because of that whole machismo-ism that, you know, we have just pulsing through our veins, you know, and being passionate about our sport, like we're passionate about our music, our food, and our women, and our people in general, that you're not supposed to do a thing like that. You know what I mean? It's like you just let down a whole crowd of followers, and you basically gave them the finger by not letting your heart be left in that ring, by not showing that part of near death that I'm willing to go through the fire and be burnt, you know, to give you what you guys want. That's what a lot of Latino fans are expecting, and that's what they want. And if you don't get it,
I think that's just boxing fans too with him, you know.
Right.
I think in general, we don't, certainly the Latinos, they're not going to get behind you. You're like, dude, yeah, this is the wrong thing to say. But the boxing fans in general, I think you're going to take a look at that and go, yeah, man, that's really not what we wanted to hear out of a fighter. Particularly, you know, it was such a good fight, and then he kind of just capitulated, turned away, and then all of a sudden it was over. And he gives that answer. You know, yeah, you kind of don't want to put your faith in that guy ever again.
Which sucks because he does give us good fights. I mean, he has shown, besides the Mayweather and the Peterson, you know, he has shown that he's willing to now trade and do a little bit more. But then you we just continuously see that glimpse of him having a mental breakdown in the ring. You know, obviously that those headbutts, those intentional headbutts that he was trying to give to Floyd Mayweather's, you know, face was a meltdown of him not being able to control his emotions in the ring. You know, and we saw that from the Madonna fight, and it just led all the way up to his past fight with Mayweather. You know, so it's just really hard for me to believe that he's going to be able to sell out tickets or make people suggest any different of what we've seen of him already. You know, it's just that now. He's now got to live with it. He's not gonna be able to erase it and delete it. It's now embedded in a lot of boxing fans' minds that this guy is just, you know, you don't know what you're gonna get out of him. And you can now throw Victor Ortiz, and I hate to say this because I like the kid, you know, you could literally throw him in the basket of Kerman Cintron.
Hmm. You think so? He's already there?
I think so, man. You know, I've responded to a lot of mail for, you know, that we received on leaving the ring, where a lot of fans have just been completely turned off by him, you know, and they're just not in belief, you know. And just the same as when we had Berto on, and I did say that Andre Berto, and you even agreed on this, that he was getting Victor Ortiz at the right time, the right moment in his career, you know, where you could really see him now just kind of coming in for a paycheck, maybe. I don't know. I'm hoping that that's not necessarily going to be true. But I think I think he's ended at that high skill level that he was trying to reach. I think we've seen the end of days for him.
Interesting. Well, hang on. I got our first guest coming in. Let me jump over.
Go right ahead. We're going to have Chris Pearson, who made his pro debut coming from the World Series of Boxing, a highly decorated amateur fighter. And he's going to be coming on talking about now moving into the pro rankings. And a little later, we're going to have Eloy Prince Perez out of Salinas, California. He's going to be fighting Adrian Broner for his title bout there. And hear about the strategy and what his thoughts of moving up. That's something that a lot of folks have been wanting to see Eloy Prince Perez do, is move up and possibly get a shot at a title. And guess what? That dream has came true for the new year. So let's see if we got Gabriel back on the line. Gabe, you with us, brother?
Yeah, I am back. Perfect.
Go ahead.
Timing. I'm here with, we'll discuss what weight class he's going to be fighting at. He started at middleweight. I think he's moving down to junior middleweight. But he is part of what we're going to be doing now on our show again, the Prospect Watch. He's 1-0. He was, I think, 2-0 last year in the Matadors. You can correct me if I was wrong. Chris Pearson out of Ohio is joining us here. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey,
my
Chris,
pleasure,
how you
man.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about your pro debut. I mean, you had it was a pretty quick knockout. You took the guy out. I believe it was you started it off with the right hand, right?
Actually, yeah, I hurt him with a right hook, and once I seen that he wobbled and was hurt, I decided to hop on top of him and go ahead and get him out of there.
And, you know, and I had a chance to take a glimpse on that on YouTube, man. And, you know, I got to tell you, for a guy that's named Sweepy, you definitely go out there. I know a lot of people would they hear that name and they're going to think, oh, you know, massive defense guy, not a whole lot of pop. But you,
right.
You know, when I saw you in the World Series of Boxing with the Matadors, you were one of the main fighters that I look for because you were that exciting. You were a guy that were willing to trade. And even with your last fight and their finale, I mean, you walked away. Your face was pretty busted up, but you gave a hell of a fight. To me, it just looks like you kind of enjoy being tagged a little bit. Like, it's almost like if you don't get tagged a few times, you feel like you're not in the fight. Is that – am I semi-true about that?
Actually, what it really is, at the end of the day, I just want to win. You know, I would, if I could go in there and not get touched, of course, that's how I would go. You know, I would rather it be like that. But like I say, you know, when you're in there and the fight gets tough and you feel like you got a chance of losing, it just kind of, it kind of clicked for me then, and know, like, okay, I got to pick it up because, like I said, I don't want to take any L's. So it's not really like I feel like I need to be hit, but, you know, if I feel like I'm losing the fight or if it's close, you know, I try to make sure I pick it up so I can get that decision.
Absolutely. Gabriel?
Chris, take us back to last year. You've had kind of an interesting ride. You came into the Matadors late, you know, the semi-pro league. Our listeners know what that is in the World Series of Boxing. And you kind of had a trial by fire and kind of being pro all of a sudden, even though they call it semi-pro, the punches, I'm sure, felt professional.
Right.
And then you go back to the amateurs, and then you made a decision about, you know, becoming just a full-blown pro. Talk to me a little bit about that, about all that transition there.
The WSB, you know, joining the WSB gave me a lot of, you know, good experience because I was able to fight against top guys in the world, you know, from all around, you know, different Olympians. I got Olympic gold medalists. So being in that league, you know, fighting those caliber fighters, it was very good, my confidence, especially to be victorious. So coming back to the amateurs, you know, getting ready for the U.S. Nationals, I really didn't go in there thinking I had a chance in losing. Like, I knew going in, I felt going in that I was going to win nationals. You know, that was my mindset. But, of course, you got to prepare. So I made sure that I did what I needed to do in training to go in there and be victorious. But I was very confident coming back to the amateurs. And even going to the Olympic trials, I felt like I was the best middleweight. I felt like I was the best guy in the country and the best chance for us getting a medal in the games. But after everything played out, you know, kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. I still have a lot of respect for USA Boxing because they helped build who I am. But I felt like, you know, some stuff is more politics than anything. So even though my weight class is still open, my dream is always to be, you know, a world champion, and I also wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist. But at the end of the day, the most important dream was being a world champion in the professional ring. So I sat back and thought about it, and you know, I felt like I had did a lot in amateurs. I accomplished a lot, and I really just didn't have that urge to stay amateur anymore. I was really looking forward to becoming a professional and a world champion like I'm on the road to doing right now. So, you know, that's pretty much what it boiled down to.
What's that?
I was going to ask, was a little bit of signing with Al Haymon, was that a little bit of an initiative to kind of go pro too?
Yeah, because, you know, Al Haymon, it's funny because he came toward the end right before I got ready to sign. I had talked to everybody, you know, all the top managers, top promoters, and I was getting ready to come to a decision, but I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. So when he called, it was more like I was kind of waiting for him to call me. Actually, I wasn't gonna reach out to him because I wanted him to want me as a fighter. So so when he called me, it was like, okay, this is who I want to sign with. This is the guy that's doing the best with fighters, you know, that's really looking out for his guys and building up the fighters the right way. So when I got the call from him, I knew, like, okay, this is it. This is who I want to sign with, and this is who I want to, you know, I want to carry my career. So I was just waiting on this phone call, honestly.
And you were a 60 in the amateurs, right? You were middleweight.
Yes, sir.
But now, and as a matador, you were a 160. But I read it, you know, I watched you do your photo shoot yesterday as I got my workout on at the Fortune Gym. Which was kind of surreal. And now you're saying you're coming down to 54.
Yes, sir.
Why the decision to do that?
I'm not really. I've never been a real middleweight. Like, fighting 165, I've never struggled making weight. I've never, you know, I always felt like I was fighting much bigger guys, you know. But I just couldn't hold 152 for a whole week in the amateurs, like, and feel strong. So, but in the pros, you know, you make that weight one time, and then you can rehydrate and be good the next day. So that's what it played to as a professional. I told my coaches, and they even knew before I said anything that I wasn't going to be a 160. I might finish my career at 160, but I'm definitely going to be a junior middleweight. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if I actually dropped down and was able to make 147. So I'm just in the process right now, just trying to bring my weight down to get in the best shape possible. Because the pros are a totally different ballgame than the amateurs. You know, amateurs is more about skill than the pros. It's a lot about, it's more about, you know, heart and conditioning and strength and just being smart, picking the right shot. So I want to give myself the best opportunity to be successful, you know, and walking around fighting guys that's coming down from 180 and 190, and I'm barely making the weight at 150.
Right.
You know, I don't think that's smart. So I feel like I give myself a better advantage of going down the weight and then rehydrating and being a bigger guy instead of naturally always being a smaller guy.
Chris, when you went in signing with Al Haymon, what was the thought process for you? I mean, because obviously you probably have kind of surfed around the web and noticed some of the negative, conversations about Al Haymon, about his fighters, that they're a little pampered. They don't really get tested. They do get tons of money, and they get the HBO dates and, you know, the big high-profile fights. But when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, when it's time for them to be really tested, they end up almost falling a little short on that there. How about yourself here? I mean, you know, when you go in this conversation, and like you said, you want to fight the best, and I've talked to you before this, you know, and you said, look, I want to be great. But being great, you're going to have to fight some real fights. Is that something that you've stressed to your management team?
I'm letting them do what that's their job. They're the management team, and they're the matchmakers. I'm letting them deal with that. But I know what I'm capable of. I've been battle-tested. You've seen the WSB fight. You've seen the
right
caliber of guys I was able to be victorious against. So I know that when it get down, when it comes to that point, when I fight a guy that pushes me to that level, I know I can go there. So I don't really worry too much about that. Whoever they line up for me to fight, I'm going to do my job in training camp, and I'm going to be prepared for them. So I'm not worried about eventually running into a guy that might be better than what I'm used to fighting, because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Like you said, you want to be the best, you got to beat the top guys. And I feel like, you know, I have the ability to beat those type of guys, and I have to work at it to prepare me for those type of fights. But I'm going to let those guys, you know, do their job and manage my fights and pick my fights. And that's time. And when the time comes for me to step up and fight a real live opponent, I'll definitely be ready. Because like I said, I've seen what I'm capable of. I've been in the ring with real good guys. Like the Yamaguchis, the guys from Kazakhstan, the gold medalists. So those are guys that I wouldn't fight in the polls unless I was fighting for, you know, probably $1 million. So I fought those guys for almost nothing, but just to get the experience, you know. So it's not really, I don't worry about who I got to fight, man. I try to do my job in the gym and try to get better every day. And so, and when it comes down to fighting, you know, when I know I did what I need to do in the gym, I'm prepared for anybody.
Absolutely.
You got to figure, your job is just to get better as a fighter. That's your job.
Right.
You know,
right.
And matchmaking, I mean, there is an art to it, into building a guy, and a lot of times a fighter is not even that aware of what tests they're being offered or whatever, or the gimme fight. You know, in the first 10, it's kind of easy guys as you get your sea legs or whatever. But I guess, you know, all things being equal, if you do your job, it doesn't matter what curveball comes your way, you're supposed to be ready, right?
Exactly. When you look at guys like my idol, and I've said it before and I continue to say it, is Andre Ward, and guys like Floyd. You know, Floyd got... He has some negatives, I guess, about him that people don't like. But when it comes down to boxing, those guys fight the guys that's considered threats or good fighters, and they make it, they beat the guy so easy. It's like, dang, how is he so hyped up on this guy? He just took him apart. That's the type of fight I want to eventually be. I want to go into a fight where people think, like, I got a chance of losing, but when I get in there, I find a way to make it look easy, or I find a way to dominate my opponent, because I feel like those are the great fighters, you know. Anybody could fight a bunch of journeymen in their whole career and have a bunch of knockouts and a bunch of women, but those are not going to be the guys that's remembered. At the end of the day, they're just going to be like they had nice records, but those aren't the guys that's going to be remembered. So I want to when I get to that, when I get to the point where I'm comfortable and I know I'm ready, I'm fighting 10 and 12 rounds, I don't mind fighting the guys they consider the best. I might have a chance to beat me because I'm a competitor, and at the end of the day, you put anybody in the ring with me, if you put Floyd in the ring with me tomorrow, I'm going to go in there trying to win. No matter how great he is, I'm going to try to win because I'm a competitor, man. This is why boxing is the ultimate sport for competitors, because it's just you and your opponent. And the guy that really wants it and the guy that's really prepared is going to be victorious. You can't lie in boxing. The truth is going to come out. So that's why I love the sport, man.
Absolutely, man.
I had the same kind of conversation with another fighter we'll have on later on tonight, Eloy Perez. We'll talk about that, you know, all things being equal, when you get in the ring, the bell rings, and it doesn't matter who the favorite is or this and that, it's a fair sport on a certain level because it's just man on man. And it does, it reveals the truth. You know, did you train? Are you prepared for this? You know, are you deep inside of you? Do you have too much fear or just enough fear or whatever? It's always going to find the truth. I'm curious, you know, watching you in the gym yesterday, because it's one thing, you know, watch a guy train and work. I've always heard that you had a good work ethic, and I've seen you work and seen you fight. But what I was interested in was that you were there doing a photo shoot, and somebody remarked, that, who is this guy? And I was like, it's Chris Pearson. And I explained it. He's like, well, what's his record? And I said, 1-0. He fights this week. He's like, why is he doing a photo shoot? And I'm thinking, you know, on every level, from working out in the gym to how you handle your PR, all that, a boxer has to understand that you're your own business. It doesn't matter who's managing you and all that. It seems like you seem to get that right off the bat.
Yes, sir, but I have to give that credit to my family and my foundation, my team, because early on I even thought, like, wow, you think I can have a PR and all that this early? Like what if I come up short, you know? That's going to make me look bad. But actually, it just gave me more motivation. Having guys like Radio Raheem that put me in situations to be seen, you know, it kind of put, not pressure, but it kind of gives me that urge when I'm in the gym. Like, okay, there's people watching you now, man. So when you go out and perform, they're going to be looking for you to perform well. They're not just looking at you like another prospect. Because, and now, like I said with the WSB, I fought high-caliber guys. So going into these fights, these other kind of fights, me, mentally and physically, I feel like I should dominate these guys. And if I run into a guy that gives me problems, then oh well. But I'm preparing in the gym, and I'm mentally at a point where I feel like these guys, I'm not above anybody. Anybody can lose. But I feel like I'm supposed to beat these guys, so I'm going to make sure I go in there and do that. A lot of guys, I feel like they might look past somebody or think like, well, you know, he's a bum. Or not. These guys are coming to beat me, so they preparing for me, so I'm going to prepare for them. I don't care about their record. Whoever they put in front of me, got hands just like me, so I can get knocked out just like anybody else. So having the PR and having all that, all it does is give me more sense of urgency to work hard and to prepare myself. So when I get in the ring, I can perform well. Because at the end of the day, it don't matter how many wins I got. If I'm not impressive, I'm not going to sell tickets, you know. And I want to be impressive. I want fans to love to see me fight, and I'm willing to do what it takes to eventually get that. But I'm very thankful for the foundation I got, you know, having PR and doing the things that they're doing with me, because, you know, in boxing, like you said, you're your own business. And if I'm not sold to nobody, if nobody knows my name, how am I going to make money or have any fans if they don't know who I am? So all this is part of the process, you know. Is it a little premature? I mean, I don't think so, but like I said, I believe I can be something special, so. You know, I'm just thankful, man. I'm just thankful for everything that's around me, my team, everything, you know. So.
Well, you can look at it as premature. You can say, well, when too early to start a foundation?
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Yes. Now, you're from Ohio, right?
Yes, sir. Dayton, Ohio, Southwood, Ohio, same area.
Dayton, Ohio. So when are we going to expect to see you on cards with all these kind of other Ohio guys that are coming around? Particularly Adrian Broner, right, is also an Ohio player.
Yeah. Right. Me and Adrian Broner, we both grew up together. We both won our first national title together. So we're real good friends. I look at him like a brother. So whenever he has a world title fight, you know, I'm gonna definitely try to be on the card if I'm able to. So yeah, whenever he's fighting, because he's already a world champion, you know. So right now I'm gonna just try to feed off of his momentum, and when he has bouts coming up, I try to get on that card, and then eventually, as time goes on and I'm winning more and more fights, I'll eventually be able to bring a world title fight to my hometown of Dayton, Ohio. So you know that's the goal and that's the plan, but we're taking it one fight at a time. But definitely, I would definitely love to eventually fight in my hometown, and I enjoy fighting on the undercard of the Broner because, like I said, we're good friends. So.
Yes, there's a lot of boxing going on out of there. Rasheed Warren's out of there, right? You're out of there. There's the other guy, Jeff Camp, I think, and there's another guy that's on the Matadors. His name just escapes me right now, and he's another Ohio guy.
Raynell Williams.
Yeah, Raynell Williams. He's a real good boxer, real nice boxer.
Yeah, really good boxer. Ohio had a lot of good fighters, you know, from the past. When I was coming up watching guys, I give a lot of that credit to those guys because coming up, watching how talented those fighters was, you know, you didn't want to be the guy that just was from Ohio that wasn't no good. I wanted to be just as good as those guys. That's part of being a competitor. But it's a guy who I don't even know their names because they might have went astray. But Ohio has a lot of talent in boxing, especially the Cincinnati and Cleveland area. It's not as big in Dayton as it used to be, but hopefully I can fix that within the next couple of years. So,
let's talk about your fight on Friday. Do you know anything about this guy?
It's funny. I actually sparred this guy while I was with the Matadors. I sparred him one day. He's a strong, awkward guy. So it's really one of them fights that you don't like to have, because the guy that's awkward, he's not traditional. He do weird stuff. He got good strength, but I'm definitely prepared. Like I'm prepared to go in there and be victorious. So, but I'm not taking him lightly. I'm not looking past him. I'm going there like it's a world title fight, and I'm trying to do what it takes to be victorious.
What do you mean he's awkward? He's just kind of is he grab and move a lot or what?
Yeah, he do it, but he just you remember the guy Manuel Augustus?
Yeah.
Like Manny did a lot of stuff wrong, but it worked out kind of for him. Like he wasn't those type of guys. Like he does stuff weird. Like the one time we sparred, he did a lot of funny stuff with his arms, a lot of leaning, crazy angles, and throwing punches. So you got to definitely be careful. You can't just run in because he throw punches from every angle. And I'm the type of guys that give traditional style fighters like myself issues, because you train to block a certain punch and to move a certain way. So when a guy gets in there, he's just everywhere. It's like, what the heck is this? So, I'm definitely going there patient and smart and pick the right shots and put the shots where they need to be so I can get him out of there.
Kind of settle it down and be more fundamental. And just take your time.
Right.
Well, cool, man. Dave, I don't know if you have any more questions. I think we've kind of run the gamut with you.
I think so, too. I mean, the only thing is that, listeners, if you haven't had a chance to check out Chris, you got it, man, definitely. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. Was really stoked up about the fact when you turned pro. I just can't wait to see what you do with this new year we got here.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm very excited, man. I feel like this can be a big year as long as I do the things I'm supposed to do, and I'm looking forward to it, man.
Before you head out, hit us with your Twitter name and where we can find you and everything.
Okay, on Twitter, you can add me at _, and then my name, Chris Pearson. And, I'm on Facebook, too. Guys want to hit me on Facebook and ask me questions, send me messages. I try to respond and talk to everybody because, like I said, I'm just enjoying this ride. I'm glad that people are excited about what I'm doing, and so I just try to respond to everybody and just stay as humble as possible, because I know this is just the beginning. It's a long journey, and I'm enjoying the ride, man.
Absolutely, brother.
Well, I'll be up there on Friday, so I'll be able to check you out, and I'll make sure to say hi, and we'll do an interview afterwards and everything. I wish you luck,
cool.
Man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. I'll see you later, man.
All right, brother. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.
There you go. Chris Weepy Pearson came out of the L.A. Matadors, WSB, the World Series of Boxing. He had his pro debut just last year. Now he's getting back into the mix. Really exciting young man. You gotta take a chance to check him out. His pro debut was on YouTube. Explosive. If you can even catch some of his World Series of Boxing, the L.A. Matadors, on YouTube as well. If you can go to the L.A. Matadors YouTube channel, you should be able to have a chance to check him out. He's a really exciting fighter. I'm really curious about seeing how they're going to move. I mean, you kind of get a sense he's going to be moved pretty well, just because the fact he did sign with Al Haymon, and to get signed with Al Haymon, you got to have a little something special. Like, that just doesn't go and sign anybody, I even know fighters that were trying to get signed by him, and they went over there to whatever gym, to the Wild Card or to Maywood gym, and they didn't get the success of Haymon handing them a pen and saying, here, let's sign a contract, which he doesn't do. He doesn't sign contracts, if I remember correctly. Everything is a verbal agreement.
I still have never been able to confirm that. If I did, that's the million-dollar question. So.
Yeah, well, I've been told by a lot of people that he doesn't sign contract. It's more or less a verbal agreement. So, I kind of find that hard sometimes to kind of believe. But, when you see how much weight this guy brings, and when you're looking to try to take your career to the next level and hoping it's going to get there, sometimes money talks.
Well, I think it's sort of the way, Golden Boy had that when they had the exclusive output deal. They had a leverage on the other promoters that you know, they could use. I mean, they'd say, well, we've got these guaranteed HBO dates. And so, guys would go free agent. They'd go, Golden Boy's the best promoter in the world. They guarantee HBO dates. And boom, they'd sign with them.
Right.
You know, Al had that kind of influence and that ability to get guys on TV and also get them, you know, great paydays at the same time. And great paydays that aren't chopped up by the promoter, but that go through Al. And he kind of breaks off the promoter, you know, and then makes sure the fighter gets paid. And because of that, you know, yeah, he's able to sign guys, you know. And I mean, you know, I always kind of say, you know, I'd let Al Heyman manage me and I'd have Top Rank promote me, you know, if I was a boxer or if I had a kid that was going to be a boxer. Or if I had a fighter. So,
right.
You know, I don't really blame the guy, you know. I'm excited about him. I like that he takes it very serious, you know, and he was there for a long time yesterday, man, for that photo shoot. And I was working out the whole time. The guy was just sitting there patiently taking the photos and doing what he's got to do for his website and all that. And some people will say, well, you know, you're acting, you know, maybe his head's getting too big or he's going to get Omar Henry. But there's a difference between what Omar Henry did. And, you know, he does very well on Twitter, Omar does, but he rarely fights. He's known as kind of a bit of a head case in boxing circles. It's a little bit different. What Chris is trying to do is build up his website, build up his brand, but do it in a professional manner.
Yeah.
He seems to take it very serious, and I respect that. I like that. And especially during the week when you're making weight and you're sitting there doing a photo shoot, maybe not the smartest move in the world, but he handled it. So, you know, we'll see how it is, how that affects him on Friday. But, yeah, I'm excited about him. He's a classy guy, you know, bottom line. He seems to be a guy with integrity.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Anyways, you know, let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk boxing here on Leave It in the Ring. I know a lot of people are the main conversation right now that I'm seeing out on the forums and boxing sites and Facebook and even on Twitter is who Manny Pacquiao, because Bob Arum left, I believe it was today, to the Philippines to meet up with Manny, and who's that next opponent? You know, I sit back and I go, I really don't care, but I know a lot of folks do.
I don't care about Manny Pacquiao. I just want to scream it outside my front.
You know, Lamont Peterson is one of the names that are kind of being drawn out of that famous Top Rank hat as a possible opponent for Manny Pacquiao. I don't know how you feel about it. I haven't talked about it, but let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk about it. You can call 347-215-7598 on Leaving the Ring. The phone lines are open. Let's talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get CT, who wants to talk Pacquiao's options. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, man. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year to you guys, too. You know, I read about it today, and all I can just say is, like, I have a pretty, you know, I think it's going to be Cotto, to tell you the truth. I'm hoping that it's not, but I could just see it going that way. I don't think Marquez has to fight him again. Marquez already proved what he had to do, you know, last time. He didn't get the win. So.
He already beat him twice, so, yeah.
Right. I don't think they'll take the risk of fighting, you know, a Bradley or a Peterson, just because of the simple fact those guys are hungry, you know what I mean? They're young. You know, especially Bradley, he's been wanting to fight for, like, years, you know. When they did the little optional thing last year, when he picked Mosley, I was hoping that he was going to pick Berto last year, just to see how he would do with a quick-handed fighter, you know. I think Peterson and Bradley will bring out a dogfight in Pacquiao, and they haven't really had them type of fights, you know, in a while. I was watching on YouTube a fight that Pacquiao had with Acapito Sanchez, and that fight he was very frustrated with, you know, the roughhouse tactics, even though Sanchez was doing a little bit over-the-edge type things. But, you know, that type of fight I think Pacquiao would have trouble with, and I think Bradley and Peterson both will, you know, rough him up a bit, you know, try to time his shot. And they're both, you know, slick fighters in their own right, you know, very smart.
Right.
Not to say that Cotto and Marquez are not, because they're both technically sound, but I just think, you know, Pacquiao knows what to do with those guys. With even though he hasn't had success against Marquez, really, I think, you know, if they do pick Cotto, I wouldn't really want to watch that. But I really don't. I hope Bradley gets, you know, the pick.
I kind of want to see Cotto again.
Yes.
I think he's figured some things out, although it could have been a mirage. You know, he could have been just beating on The Walking Dead, known as Margarito. But I did find it interesting. I mean, I don't think Peterson has a shot to win that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would answer the black question with Pacquiao, which a lot of people have. Never really fought a brother, you know?
Yeah.
They always try to say, you know, he hasn't fought a finesse fighter, you know, or a boxer. What they really mean is he hasn't fought a black guy. And, you know, this is just a PC way of saying it. I would like to see that. He's fought a Mexican style. He's fought a Mexican boxer. He hasn't really fought, like, Bradley's kind of more, to me, almost like a haggler. You know, it's kind of boxer brawler. Kind
yeah.
of. He breaks you down slowly, gets you to the body. It's very, you know, he kind of brings his lunch pail with it. It's not flashy. And Peterson's probably exactly the same way. I just don't. I think I give Bradley a shot. I don't give Lamont Peterson as much of one. And I'm not sure, how do you promote those fights? Are they universally, you know, acceptable fights for everybody? I mean, are people, or is it going to be like two guys that are about as exciting as Josh Clotty in terms of personality and style? I mean, but they can speak English better than he can. Is it going to be like that? I just wonder. I mean, the sexy choices are kind of gone for Pacquiao, other than the fight we're never going to get. I don't know where he goes. I'd like to see Cotto.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Dave, what do you think?
Well, you know, I Lamont Peterson, regardless of what he has done, I think he still has some unfinished business, which is with Timothy Bradley, or more unfinished business with Amir Khan. Though I agree not to jump into that fight immediately, you know, I think he's earned the right to probably kind of go with something a little bit different than going with a rematch immediately. Now, money-wise, does it make sense for Lamont Peterson to go after Manny Pacquiao if Manny and his team are looking at him? Of course. But, it now kind of boils down with, Manny's been doing for a very long time, which is he's going after a guy that, yeah, Lamont's got some speed. Lamont can box. But the punching power is not there, the factor of that.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that Lamont throws an overhand right. And I think that that's the one key punch that Manny has not been able to solve, along with the uppercut. Would it be competitive? The thing I've started to learn, man, since the past year, let's not write out a lot of these guys. We did it to Eric Morales, and we did it to Marquez, with, you know, and especially with Marquez with Manny Pacquiao. And he definitely had his hands full with a veteran and a very sweet science professor in Marquez. Now, is Lamont a professor? No, but he's a very hard student and a very learned student in the game of boxing. I like it. It's competitive, but does it appeal to the mass? Does it appeal to the fans? Is it going to prove anything if he fights Lamont? Not really, because he still has that one fight that you just mentioned right now, Gabriel, the one that's never going to happen with Floyd Mayweather. Now, with Miguel Cotto, you're absolutely right. Did we really see him an improvement, or did we really see Miguel Cotto do a lot of running in that fight against a very slow walking dead Antonio Margarito, who had an eye that already had a major issue, and we knew as soon as you popped it that it was going to swell up and become a problem for him. But is it intriguing? I think so, because it does bring a lot of Latinos back in to coming to want to watch Cotto and Manny Pacquiao. Timothy Bradley, man, I would love to see that, but I don't think Top Rank wants to risk their superstar against Timothy Bradley, not at this moment, not right now. I think that Top Rank signed them to build them right away, and I think they're going to ride as much as they can with the ending career of Manny Pacquiao. That's my thoughts, man. You know,
yeah.
And
I'm sorry, I was going to ask you, if you was going to fight Cotto, like, what weight class do you think they would fight at? Would they fight at maybe a catch weight of, which I don't want, but, you know, catch weight in between 147 and 154?
Man, you know what? I think Cotto really honestly should stand his ground. Just the Mitchell Martinez stood his ground against the WBC, I think he needs to stand his ground against Top Rank, their promotional company. When it comes to this whole catchweight thing, you know what? The bottom line is Cotto, I think he's now, his body's finally either accepted or matured at that weight at over 150, that just trying to lose those extra pounds to meet Manny at a, either, what, 147 or 148, if that would be the catch weight. You know, I don't think Manny and them would want to go to 150. I would say no, and I think that might be the downfall of this fight, where it won't be signed, because I think Cotto and his team, especially now having Pedro on his corner, they're going to be a little bit smart about it, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
Me neither. You're right. I think he should definitely stand his ground. If he is going to fight Pacquiao, and, you know, don't go down any farther than, you know, 154, 153 or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Make him come up. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
You know, Cotto has won this biggest fight. He's got a title. You know, Manny has not looked good his last two fights, right? Mosley and Marquez looked terrible against Marquez. I think the leverage got to me. I don't know what you think, Gabe, but I think the leverage kind of the weights are really weighing on Cotto's corner at this moment. I mean, I know Pacquiao brings numbers, but you saw that Cotto, too, still brings a massive amount of audience that want to come and watch him fight.
Yeah, but he's not the star that Manny Pacquiao is.
Right.
He brings people. He doesn't bring pay-per-views. And at the end of the day, when you can trump a guy by at least 500,000 pay-per-views every time you fight, or, you know, over, you know, 700,000 or close to a million, it doesn't matter how many people he brings in, unless he's bringing in, like, 50,000 people. And he's not doing that. He didn't do that at Yankee Stadium. You know, so
here's the thing,
it's
going to
be what Manny wants.
Right, but this is my thought here. The first time around, Cotto decided to say yeah to everything that Manny Pacquiao and his team were suggesting, just because, one, I think the high belief was, I'm the bigger guy, you know, and on paper, it should be me having my hand risen as the victor, right? It didn't work out like that, you know. I think now, being a little bit more intelligent, because we know that Cotto is a very intelligent guy, that he's going to look at the second time around going, look, I gave all the advantages to the smaller dude when I should have stuck with these perks that I bring into the fight. And this time around, I don't see him making that same mistake at all.
Yeah. And I also think in the first fight, I think Cotto, for the first round, he fought a very good fight. You know, he used his jab, and, you know, I watched the fight, you know, a bunch of times, and I seen he just played into Pacquiao's style. You know, he
right.
got caught up with his hand speed. Instead of going to the body like he usually does, pick his punches, you know, and use his strength. You know, he got caught up with the hand speed, just tried to brawl with Manny, and, you know, he got caught with punches. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, he got out of he moved out of his envelope in, like, the second round.
Right.
He really started to get excited. And then and got into exchanges with Manny, which he can't do. The problem with Cotto is that for him to win, at this point, he's got to be boring. I think the thing that we loved him for early on was he was a very exciting fighter. He could be dropped, and I don't think that's who he is anymore. And he tries to fight that urge as opposed to give in to it. Maybe that's just the experience that comes with age, or wisdom that comes with age. But also, it's the playing it safe mentality that comes with getting older. You start to worry about your mortality a little bit and think, you know, maybe I can eke out two or three huge fights by playing it safe as opposed to going for it the way I used to. You know, just for me, just thinking about it all, and I don't think he has any sort of the bottom line is this, is Bob Arum's flying to the Philippines to talk to Manny face-to-face about who he would like to fight. Bob Arum isn't flying to Puerto Rico to talk to Cotto about shit.
Right.
So, I think it comes down to if Pacquiao's got the leverage and always will. But the bottom line for me, and just hearing, you know, you guys talk about the weights and what would benefit Matt, I honestly, I really mean this. I can't wait. And I said this when De La Hoya was in this same stage, holding up divisions as everybody jockeyed to fight him. I can't wait for Manny Pacquiao to retire and be done with the sport. And not just retire and maybe he'll come back in one more, but gone from the sport. Him and Floyd Mayweather. I can't, because I think when you remove those three giant cash cows, I know people say, well, that would hurt our sport. And where would our superstars be? Well, what it does is force everybody else to fight each other and vie for that position.
Right.
And build those. And
you're right.
I'm just sick of these ridiculous catch weights. I'm sick of, a guy moving to a division and saying, I'm not
sick of the monopoly. That's what we're sick of. We're sick of the monopoly of these fighters, these superstars are doing in our sport, you know? We had a great conversation. Remember this just earlier today with Margaret Goodman, and one of the things that we were talking about is
nobody will ever hear.
Yeah, unfortunately, man. We'll get into that a little later. But me and Gable were calling promoters and these superstar fighters slumlords of the ring. You know, they just slumlord this ring. They don't allow anybody else to get in there and possibly pay homage to the ring so they can get to that next level. It's just now it's down to the boil where it's ridiculous. In order for us to really have other stars or any potential stars, there's got to be a give and take for the guys that are already on top. You know,
well,
that's what competition's about.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's kind of like true capitalism. It's like however much money you want to put into this,
right?
How much hard work you want to put into this, that's what you're going to get out of it. I don't begrudge Bob Arum what he's done, what he's built. And guys, you know, like Steve Kim makes very strong cases for why boxing should remain the way it is now. But the way I look at it is, I've always said this, I don't care if, like, I get that Bob spends more money on his promotions. I get that he does it better than everybody else and knows how to build fighters and build B-sides to go along with those fighters. But at the end of the day, if they're kind of preordained crap, and I already know which guy's going to win because one guy's an A-side, one guy's a B-side that had to give up 5 pounds and the location and the gloves and everything else, that's not why I watch boxing. It makes me a fantasy boxing guy, I guess, or it makes me a blogger or a dreamer or an optimist, but that's not what made me love boxing. What made me love boxing is not knowing who was going to win and watching two guys fight for it and ultimately one guy prevail. Always my ideal.
I'm going to tell you right now, you know when you have a good boxing match in front of you is when you're sitting there with butterflies in your stomach, right? You're biting your fingernails, and everything, all the surroundings is basically at a shutdown. You don't see and you don't hear nothing because you're so consumed in the fight that's about to happen. That's what, to me, is a super fight. That, to me, is a fight. That's a true match, you know? And what you just mentioned, Gabriel, was the whole thing about fantasy boxing, or not even that, you know, when you already can predict who's going to win, that's like going to the movies to watch a superhero movie. You already know the guy is going to be the last man standing. We don't want to see stuff like that, you know. Give us some mystery a little bit, you know. Give us something a little bit more where we're willing to sit down and go, wow, okay, let's see what we got here. Things are just, right now, it's just too much, and it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, last time I seen a super fight that, you know, I felt that type of way about was Trinidad when he fought De La Hoya. I just, you know, I was into the fight. I wanted to see who would win. And in that fight, you didn't know who was going to win, you know. You didn't live up to the hype. But, you know, that was the type of fight that I was like, wow, I want to see who wins.
Absolutely. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I agree, you know. Let's pass in some other fight fans here on Leave It in the Ring. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We got Eloy Perez calling in. We're calling them in about 6:30. A little later, we're having Adrian Broner as well on Leave It in the Ring. And then I've just been told right now, I've been told that Snooki's a promoter. You hear about that? Hear it, Gabe?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. They're a promoter and stuff, and they're really looking to get them on, they're looking for themselves to get on some boxing platforms to really promote their upcoming event. So I'm being texted like crazy right now. Let's pass in the fight fans on the Leave It in the Ring. Let's go with Daryl, who wants to talk about fights he wants to see this new year, 2012. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
What's going on with you, fellas?
Oh, good, man.
Yeah, you stole a lot of my thunder there, man, with talking about Mayweather and Pacquiao, and believe me, I'm a Mayweather and Pacquiao guy. I mean, I love to see both of the guys fight, and I mean, both for different reasons, obviously. But I just think it's time for these. I want to see them lose it in the ring. I don't want them to retire. I want somebody to retire these guys. I mean,
right.
Because to me, that's when you really have a new star emerge. Back when you had Ali taking out Liston, and, you know, you had a line of succession there. So you know he's the guy that beat the guy. But, like, when Lennox Lewis retired from the heavyweight division and there was nobody there to beat him, to take that away from him, now, I mean, it's been muddled for, what, the last 10 years? So that's what I would like to see out of it. I would like to see these guys get in the ring and lose to somebody. So, and I think the guy who has the best shot and it doesn't to do that would be Tim Bradley in the Pacquiao fight. And I don't even know if that's a great chance, but I know he's got a solid chin. He's a guy that's going to keep coming. He's going to keep fighting. So,
you know, I know a lot of people, they say I'm not sold on Timothy Bradley. I don't think he could do much. I honestly think that he has a greater chance of beating Manny Pacquiao right now than most other guys. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, before, let's talk about the beginning of last year, you know, I would say no. But even though this is the catch here, is Timothy's fought, I believe, what, was it one or two times last year, Gabriel? It was once, right? He only fought one time, and then he got put on the shelf because, it, you know, the whole promotional Gary Shaw thing. That now it kind of leaves, this is what happens when you go through legal problems, that you end up falling off in the minds of boxing fans, where they kind of put you in a category of, he can't win. It's impossible because it's not put in your face here. But this is a guy that does have high skill level. This is a guy that we've seen adapt to his matches. Now, is he adapt to the skill level of Manny Pacquiao? No, but Manny's slowing down. He's not looking like the same old dude. And with Juanma Marquez was able to do as an older fighter, it makes you think what a younger guy that's hungry and quick and does have some ring generalship and knowledge could do to Manny Pacquiao. I find it's a very interesting match, but I don't think Top Rank wants to go that route. I don't think they're ready right now to sell out their cash cow and try to build a fighter that doesn't have a fan base at all at the moment. We've seen that happen when Oscar De La Hoya was fighting guys and was beaten. Look, Sugar Shane Mosley was big in Pomona, California, but just in that section. Nowhere else in Southern California. And when he beat Oscar, he didn't shoot the rocket. He didn't, you know, shoot up to the sky and became that bright star, you know. And Bob Arum is a very smart guy. He understands the business of boxing. And he's also a guy that's going to look at you going, I'm 80 years old. What the fuck do you guys know? And guess what? He's right. What do we know? We're just calling for the big fights. We want to see the fights. But we really don't think about the business end of it.
But I just got a few ideas for fights I'm going to toss out there to you guys. And I know this has been beaten to death, but an idea about how to get a tournament to work with big fighters in it. First, I'm going to the trio of Wanma, Gamboa, and Gary Russell Jr. I don't know if Gary's ready yet, but maybe by the end of the year, get a couple of fights under his belt, a couple of real tests. I think he'd be right there with those guys. To see any combination of those three guys fighting, I think that would be good. I would want to see Brandon Rios, since he was talking about moving up to 140, see him and Lamont Peterson go at it. Maybe he could avenge his brother's loss. I think that would be pretty interesting. Two guys who are going to stand right there and, you know, go at it for 12 rounds. And as far as the tournament, could they do it in a way where, like, the big stars, you know, the bigger names in the fight got a bye in the first round, and you do it to where the first round is worth, the entire term, let's say, is worth $50 million. The first round fight, you know, the prelims, you're going to get guaranteed the winner gets $2 million, and the guy who loses gets $1 million. The next round, you go up, and then for that championship bout, the winner takes, you know, $10 million or $15 million, and the loser gets $5 million, something like that. See what I'm saying? Where you could just break it down where nobody can say, I'm not getting paid enough money for this fight.
Right.
So that it's a progressive. If you keep winning, you keep getting more money. That's interesting. I mean, it's just going to be, you know, it's just come down to, you know, boxing doesn't want a collective bargaining agreement. They don't want...
Right.
You know, like a lot of the big proponents, you'll say, like, well, what if you had a CBA where, you know,
all the revenues that you were doing from all the promotions, they kind of were put into a pot or shared evenly. That way you wouldn't have, like, Ludabella being the, you know, Kansas City Royals to Bob Arum's Yankees when it came to time to have a middleweight champion take on a guy like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. But at the same time, I imagine there's rules in place that, regarding how much they have to spend in terms of putting out the publicity and trying to at least hang in a relative sense with those other promoters. I'm not sure if the Ludabellas or the Palulos or the smaller guys really even try to come close, other than they get the HBO date and they kind of go from there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I talked to Lou today. I mean, he said they did $480,000, $500,000, somewhere in there, for Martinez Barker at the gate. And he's like, you know, a lot of people trashed me for putting out discount tickets or two-for-ones, and yet they say I'm not a real promoter. And he's like, well, what does a real promoter do but try to get people any way you can into the building? And, you know, he actually cited, and I haven't, you know, the conversation was close to the radio show, so I haven't had a chance to really do the research and back up what he was saying. But he's like, if you look at it, Martinez is actually in the top 10 of gates for last year, and yet we're denigrated as being not very good at promoting. It's like I put him in the same venue 2-3 times in a row. I've built the audience a little bit bigger every time. My gates have actually increased. And he said, now contrast that, you know, look at, you know, take a look at the other gates that happened. The fight that I was at that I keep laughing about, the Antione, not Antione, but the Marais Agbeko too, which didn't do very well. Even the Brandon Rios, as big of a star as people treat him, did not do well at the Home Depot Center. He did okay. I would have considered it disappointing if I was the promoter. It wasn't even half full. To me, what was interesting about the discussion and just the thought is that it's kind of like with networks. You know, when are the belts important? Well, when the networks decide that they're important. And, you know, when is good promoting or a guy actually selling the gate or who he's with matter, only when that serves your argument. It's a bit of a long rant, but the thing is, I mean, it's all kind of relative. And I think, you know, Lou, with his budget, has done some things with Martinez. Could he have done more? Probably. Would I have done things differently? Probably. But at the same time, which one of us, any of us, would have turned down $1.5 million to fight Darren Barker? You know, I don't think any of us would. So I don't know. You know, I don't really know what the answer is to, you know, getting all these big guys to fight. Is it a tournament? Is it Lou spends more money promoting his guy and turns him into a pay-per-view star? And in a sense, you know, charges all the boxing fans $50 so he can build his guy and Bob Arum can then denigrate his pay-per-view numbers. Is it a national commission, an international commission? Fuck, I have no idea. I just know that I always want to get back to that thing where I'm watching a fight and I have no idea who's going to win. I don't know if you can provide me with that, but it's hopefully
the,
someone.
The thing, too, it really doesn't even go down to the fighters they deciding whether or not they want to, if they would want to enter to this tournament. It boils down to the promoters. Are they willing to share the promotional deal, the TV, spread that they're going to be giving now? That's what it really comes down to, you know. And we've talked about how, you know, boxing is really considered a poor man's sport, but it's a rich man's sport down the line, you know, and the guys that are the key players that become profitable of this rich man's sport are really the promoters and the managers. And you know, when we talk about regulating the sport and getting this sport back on track, of not even back on track, because it's never been on the right track, it's basically in business, it's been scattered all over the place. It's a mess. And these guys like it that way. Why? Because it's a lot easier to kind of finagle their way in and get the monies that they're seeking and not play fair with the rest of the guys that are in the sandbox. It's really hard to put a bunch of guys to be in agreement, especially when they got a key player that's bringing in millions and millions of dollars. They're looking at you like, well, why do I need to do anything with you?
Right.
You know, that's the sucky part about our sport, you know, is I still believe we have the number one combat sport in the world, but it could really be in a much higher level, you know, if we could get people to get along. But unfortunately, a lot of these promoters act like the New Jersey housewives. You put them in the same place, they just want to scratch and scream at each other.
to kind of touch on what you said, I mean, I'm biased, I'll admit. I mean, I've been in love with boxing since whenever I can remember. I have files of black and white fights, Sugar Ray Robinson and Carmen Basilio, and, I mean, fights on top of fights. So, I mean, I'm a bias. But to me, at its highest, at its most dramatic, at the very top of the sport, when you got the two best fighters or the two best fighters in the division, that's better than a last-second tip-in, a last Hail Mary, whatever in sports. I mean, this is just my opinion. But when you have that, and that's what boxing has gotten away from, and that's what really, really bothers me. And that's why I would like to just see people used to fight each other when they were young. These young fighters used to fight each other on the way up. You know, you saw Sugar Ray and these guys fighting when they were in their early 20s. Not when they got long in the tooth, not when they were 34 and 35, Mayweather and Pacquiao still ducking, dodging one another. You know what I'm saying? These guys were fighting. They were fighting early and often, and that's what I wanted to get back to, man. People weren't worried about perfect records and stuff like that. They were fighters, so what they wanted to do was fight. And I think that if it was up to the fighters, I think the fighters would still do that. It's the promoters, like you said. The promoters are what's holding back the sport alive.
Exactly. You know, it's the only way I can think of this is that zero in boxing, that unblemished record and undefeated record, it's almost like the website era. Everybody was, you know, buying websites and they were making tons of money, and they really didn't think that there was going to be a crash and a downfall, that they were going to end up losing all their money down the line. Well, that undefeated has been riding pretty high, that these promoters figured it out. You know, if they could sell you the O, they definitely know they're going to get the money, the number signs that come along with it. It hasn't crashed. You would think it would, because it has turned off a lot of fans, and the money, it's really not the same of when they were trying to, the way when they figured it out in the 80s. It's not the same. But to them, hey, you know, it's a few mil here and there, it's success. It's a success story. Rather, they don't look at it as them losing money. They look at it as gaining money. When a really good investor, a really good business person would be looking at, you know, I just lost 50 potential million buyers, rather than I just gained 15 million buyers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, well, brother. Thank you.
That's what I got for you, man. Good show, bro.
Hey, thank you, brother. Take care. You know, I found it really interesting that the WBC now approved Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. to move forward with his fight with Marcos Rubio, and also saying that, you know, Sergio Martinez is going to be fighting Matthew Macklin, and saying that they have now guaranteed. How many times have you heard this before, Gabe? You know, now they're guaranteed that they have to meet each other in the middle of the year for the title belt, for the WBC belt now. You know, now that he wrote it down, right? It's to me, it's more of it's more solid. Unfortunately, he can just delete that email and say, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I never said that.
Yeah, it's like, how can you tell Jose Silva's bullshitting? His lips are moving. I'll believe it when I see it. I just don't. You know, they got to this point. Now, Rubio's got his shot. Justice is done there. Good for him. He's being strangely silent about the Danny Garcia fight. I'll have something coming up on that on Max Boxing very shortly. With the, you know, Josie Alustigan. That one's more interesting because, you know, he should be – he's the number one contender, and he should have this fight, and yet they're bypassing him for Danny Garcia. And there's really no one's been able to answer that question. Why is Danny Garcia getting the shot? He's the number two guy. Why is he able to leapfrog to Eric Morales? And it's not even like his style is probably a little less dangerous than Lusigan, but it's still not a good style for Eric Morales.
I don't think it is a good style for Eric Morales at all, to tell you the truth. I think that, you know... Eric Morales and his team are really not looking into what Morales is kind of faded off to. You know, they're looking at a kid that may be over his head, yeah, it could be premature, but at the same time, his style, we've seen it with Eric Morales, that if you have mobile feet and you have fast hands, you can give him a lot of problems.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, style-wise, he's going to be a problem. But at the same time, it's what's crazy about it is that the agreement with Alusigan was voted on at the WBC convention, and it was specifically put in there by his people, was that even if an injury occurs and makes this fight get postponed, at that point he's either going to be stripped or he's got to fight the number one contender. He can't fight Danny Garcia anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This fight had to happen on January 28th or not at all, because you're costing the guy time. And on one hand, you know, the argument would be, in kind of line with what we're talking about, well, why don't you have Lusigan fight in the meantime while he waits? I mean, what kind of promoter are you? This guy hasn't fought since he won his number one contendership. Well, what happens if he goes and fights and he loses or he gets injured? He loses that spot. I mean, you worked your whole life to get to this spot. And Lusigan is not a guy that is well-known in this country.
No.
And people will say, well, that's exactly why he doesn't deserve the fight. But you know what? He's a fighter. And he fought. He paid $10,000 to get his spot. This is a family man. He's got kids to feed. And he can't do his job because the WBC keeps hemming and hawing. Eric Morales shouldn't even have fought for this belt in the first place. That's the real crime here.
I don't get that. You know,
pushing this guy and pushing this guy away. It's criminal what they're doing.
I don't get that. Do people not understand that contenders need that chance to be exposed? I mean, when you hear somebody say, well, the reason he shouldn't fight it because we don't know about him, no shit. That's why he should be given the chance. That's how we found out about Marcos Chino Madonna. Nobody knew nothing about this guy until we fought Victor Ortiz. You find really honestly diamonds in the ground by digging them up, not leave them in there and go, well, there's no diamonds here because they're not on top of the ground. Of course not. That's not the way things are done. Boxing is, in a lot of ways, it's realistic. It's life. That's why we watch it. You know, you don't find the prize in a box by not opening it up. This guy, obviously, he paid his debt. He fought his way to that position. You give him a shot, regardless of whether or not you can either say his name, spell his name, or you've ever seen him. To me, that's what comes down with boxing fans when we have a double standard. Oh, you know, well, this guy shouldn't get any shot because we don't know who he is. Or this guy should get a shot because we've seen him fight numerous times and he's lost, and he's guaranteed to lose to Eric Morales. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. That's what's so frustrating about the sport, is that on one level it works, you know, like capitalism. You know, Bob Arum is going to build up his guys, and he has every right to forever match only his guys against his guys. It's his company. He can do whatever he wants with it. But then at the same time, when it favors him, he kind of enters back into the sport and goes, well, let me maneuver my guy so he can get his eighth belt in his eighth division. And now he's a junior middleweight champion. But if you ask me to fight anybody of note in that division, not like my B side that I brought to the party and put in a catchweight fight so they could fight for this belt, you ask me to fight anybody else, I'm going to tell you don't know what the hell you're doing and to go after yourself.
Right.
But that's what pisses me off, is they use the system to their benefit, and then when it doesn't benefit them, they kind of throw things away. And I mean, they maneuvered Chavez to that spot, having never fought anybody of note at 160 pounds. I think we can't stress that enough. Him and Canelo have not fought anybody of note at their division,
right,
and yet they're champions. How they even got to that spot is beyond me. But now they're pushing people that actually earned the shot out of the way. And you can make the promotional argument and all that, and I get that, but then drop the belts. Just admit that you're in the Bob Arum League and you're not in any other league.
Yeah.
And let these guys have their belts and do their rankings and do their thing, and you stay out of it. I'll agree to that, but don't do both and then denigrate the guy that did it the right way and paid his money, paid $10,000, or the guy that worked his whole life and got that WBC belt. And I still can't figure out, I mean, they sure stripped him fast, and yet the rules don't apply to Floyd Mayweather because he makes more money for them when he fights and they sanction his bout. So he can make them $1 million. Martinez really can't do that for them as much. Chavez certainly can. but he goes to jail, and there's a moral turpitude clause, 125, I think, Section A, in the WBC's own rules. And Floyd Mayweather should not have that belt right now. Sorry.
Right.
According to their rules. So, to me, that's the thing. If you're going to have rules, you're going to have rankings, follow that. If you want to go the route of, it's my money and I'm going to take my toys where I want to, go that route. But you got to pick one.
Exactly. Jose Suleiman, he plays that stepfather role beautifully. You know that old saying. You know, this guy treats him like it's his stepchild. That's exactly what he's done to a lot of these fighters that have earned the right, and he's turned the cheek and said, "Nah, not gonna help you out, buddy. Sorry about that." To the next one. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. Let's talk some boxing. Let's talk about some upcoming fights, some fights that we're hoping to want to see. Let's talk about what's going to be happening this weekend or next week, whatever the case is. Let's talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's patch in Rob, who wants to talk about fights in 2012. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think the tournament thing is going to work. I think the only reason it worked was because Andre Ward, Andre Durrell, and these guys, they were still trying to make a name for themselves, and the European guys wanted to cross over into America. If it was like a guy with like a Pacquiao, Mayweather stature, it's like these promoters, it's their investment. They don't want to risk that. So, I mean, you see some guys get cold feet once they lose, and I'm like, hey, you know, I might have to just drop out for some one reason or another. I'm just going off on what y'all were talking about earlier. But 2012, who knows what it's going to look like. I think y'all think Top Rank's just going to go ahead and do a little Top Rank empire going on now that Mayweather's out of the picture?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. I mean,
I think they can. Yeah,
I mean, and you look at it. I mean, Floyd's been gone. He comes back and he reasserts himself. He shows, you know, just how long his pay-per-view member is, and then he goes back away. In the meantime, Manny's just kind of chugging along and kind of going with numbers, you know, going with volume, you know, to show how big his is. But I think they kind of ignored Floyd this whole time. You know, Floyd passed, they immediately made that Claudio fight. They passed again, they made another fight. They don't really, you know, Bob is not beholden to networks or what other fighters are doing. He's worried about what he's doing. And that's why they're so good at what they do. They have their own plan. You know, Floyd is going to do what he's going to do. And honestly, I mean, there's no good business plan whose basis, you know, comes from worrying about what Floyd Mayweather's unpredictable ass is going to do. You're just not going to be able to set that up.
You know, the only thing that I'm kind of wondering about is Floyd has changed his nickname twice from Pretty Boy now, and then it went to Money. Going to jail for 90 days, does he change it again? Is it Floyd Don't Drop the Soap Mayweather?
Wow.
I know. I had to do
boy.
It.
That's Pretty Boy. It's going
to
work there.
It's not going to work there in jail. Pretty Boy.
Yeah, okay. It's just because I was talking about this with a guy, a friend of mine that's going to come down from Dallas. We're going to Chavez fight. I checked out that press conference the other day. He looked motivated. He looked actually kind of – he didn't look puffy in the face like he usually does between fights. But because I see maybe like – I mean possibly a Chavez versus Cotto, you know, because, you know, cashing out Cotto for Chavez, depending on how Chavez looks. The Salido Lopez winner going against Garcia. You got – Don't air. You have the Gamboa. You have Brandon Rios fighting somebody. I see like Marquez going. You know they got Marquez Bradley. See Bradley Pacquiao. Marquez maybe a Marquez Rios. I mean, they can pretty much do the year by themselves. I mean, Golden Boy has like a lot of guys on the rebound. They got you know they got to build themselves up. Gamberto, Khan, Ortiz. You know. Morales, you know, he's only a couple fights left. But I'm thinking maybe that's what's going to happen. Who knows?
I know. If you really think about it, they're the ones that kind of really came on top at the end of this year, you know, 2011 in Top Rank. And now rolling into this 2012, they still have a very high competitive level year for them looking ahead. And that's exactly why we keep going back and really sounding like a broken record that Top Rank does a very, very good job in the way they do their promotional work for their fighters. They end up bringing very intriguing fights. Chavez and Cotto, I would not even complain about that. I actually would like to see that fight happen there, you know. Brandon Rios, who wouldn't you want to see the guy fight, you know? I like to see the guy cuss himself off in the mirror. You know, I'd pay to see that because the guy's so hilarious and stuff, you know. You know, but then you got Nonito Dornier, you know, and Gamboa. That's explosive right there. That right there is just going to – if we're looking for a fun match and a match to be anticipated, that is a match right there that a lot of us are waiting to see.
Rigondeaux, I was thinking Rigondeaux, they got him too. I mean, I would like to see like
Rigondeaux's having a great match coming up with Rico Ramos. That to me is going to be a fun fight. I don't know you guys are thinking about that, but I like that fight.
I like Rigondeaux. I'm not a big Rico Ramos guy. He can really bore the hell out of me, but
I'm not a big Rico Ramos fan either. You know, but I think this Rigondeaux fight is really it's a really good like matchup. You know what I mean? It can become a little boring. But at the same time, we're talking about some skill level here. You're going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I what I hope is there's a little less skill and a lot more punching from Rigondeaux. But once he finishes him off, which I expect him to do, I'd love to see Rigondeaux fight Nonito Donaire. I think that's a hell of a fight. It's a very competitive fight.
Yeah, because you got one guy, he's an offensive beast, and the other guy, I mean, he's got craft. He's got a counterpunch, and he's got, you know, counterpunch ability and a pedigree, you know. And I just got one more question about, because I'm gonna head out to one of the first fights of the year, the Chavez Rubio. I mean, I'm going Rubio, but Chavez he sounded like he had a chip on his shoulder, you know. I don't know, maybe the things that Rubio said, he didn't look as puffy in the face, you know what I mean. He kind of had that mystique, like how Ortiz had before he fought Berto the first time.
Right.
You know, I think he's getting annoyed and, you know, but he, I don't know, just something about this fight. But, I mean, what do y'all think of that? Because that one's coming up pretty quick.
Was it a chip or was it a silver spoon on his shoulder?
I mean, I'm not a
I think those are the rhinestones on his shirt that you saw.
It fell off and he was pissed. He's like, damn it, the dragon is all messed up now. I can see what you're saying. I kind of watched that press conference and maybe it's just so many times. I mean, he's probably said I'm in the best shape of my life more than Oscar De La Hoya has, or is certainly closing on his record. But maybe it has clicked in for him. I mean, he's kind of, you know, the classic, you know, young prince that was supposed to inherit the kingdom and reluctantly did so, showed up fat, was not motivated to do it, just had no reason other than he was supposed to do this. But this last fight, he did show up in good shape. He did his job. I always just think it's weird that we get excited if he's in shape. It's like, it's kind of supposed to be. But I worry that Rubio, you know, he was kind of hot there for a second with Lemieux. I don't think that Chavez Jr. is going to fall into the same trap that Lemieux did and
no.
then worry so much about his power. He's going to be volume. He's going to, you know, use that energy that Alex Ariza gives him for all 12 rounds. I kind of expect him to win. I don't think that Rubio is going to win.
I see Rubio really falling, really backfiring in his trap of what he did with Lemieux. I don't think it's going to work with Chavez or the referee because I think him shelling up and leaning on the ropes, it could really tend, especially in Texas, a very large Mexican crowd that are really going to be rooting for the King Arthur, which is Julio Cesar Chavez, not Prince John, you know, probably stop the fight a little earlier than we would want, and it wouldn't work out for Rubio. His strategy is going to be to lean back and let the kid gas himself out, use the exact same roadmap he did for Lemieux, and it's gonna backfire on the guy, you know.
Yeah, I can see that because I'm a big Martinez fan, and you know I gave up on. I don't think he's ever going to get a shot. You know what I mean? So, and then
like I said,
moves. You know, I think that's going to backfire. That's going to help him to, you know, okay, you know, we're not going to fight you now.
Yeah, exactly. And when, like I said, you know, King Arthur is obviously senior and Prince John is junior and Robin Hood is Sergio Martinez. We're all rooting for him. He's the people's champ in the middleweight division. But I'm hoping. I'm just hoping. I don't think it is. I don't think they will. I'm thinking that the WBC is hoping that Matthew Macklin, who is a very tough, great fighter that's going to come to fight, he could win. But I don't see that happening unless we finally get a non-motivated Sergio Martinez or a very aged Sergio Martinez this year.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a moment like how y'all were talking about, what Gabe was talking about last week or the week before, about how it felt weird seeing, because I was at Chavez's last fight, because I'm San Antonio down the road to Houston, and when he's holding up the belt in the corner, and Sergio Martinez just looking up, and I felt bad for the guy, you know. I mean, I saw him try to go, like, ringside, but I guess they didn't allow him to go ringside. He didn't, like, on second row, but yeah, I kind of felt shitty for him, you know, just sitting there from the outside looking at the guy holding up his belt, and everybody, you know, all the casual guys, they don't know any, all the people around that were there, they didn't know any better, cheering or buzzing, you know. And guy's, like, you know, just gloating and glowing, and this guy's on the side. Like, I don't know. I just gave up on that. I hope maybe something happens. So I'm just thinking, okay, well, let's look forward and see how that happens. I appreciate y'all's opinion. I was just wondering because I know that's coming up. I really haven't heard a lot of predictions or takes on that. And good luck to Eloy Perez. I like that kid, and I hope he messes up Adrian Broner's hair real good for this month, right?
It's February 25th. He actually right, be on in 5 minutes, and then we're going to tell Broner you said that in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
he's going to be.
Okay,
you know,
I mean,
hey Rob, you know he's going to be combing his hair during the interview, bro. Hey, thanks for calling in, brother. Take care,
yeah,
man.
I appreciate it. Right, see you.
Speaking of Prince. We're going to be calling in Eloy Perez out of Salinas, California. I've been following Eloy for quite some time, and this is his moment, man. This is definitely going to be his moment fighting Adrian Broner. And I'm really intrigued with this match, Gabe. I don't know what your thoughts are about it. I like this fight a whole lot. You know, the big question is
last two. I think that Eloy is a guy that's slowly kind of figuring himself out. And in the last couple of fights, has made some pretty big leaps in figuring out who he is and getting this confidence underneath and learning how to sit on his punches. All those little things are really starting to click in for him. Whereas Broner, I think, is, you know, they've given him some easy guys his last two fights. And I don't know if his confidence is an all-time high because of that. If
right.
It's false confidence. I don't know. Whereas this guy's just really that good. I mean, I hear about them. You know, from guys in the gym, like, yeah, I've had a chance to watch him. He's pretty amazing. And they just go crazy about him. But, you know, there's only one way to find out. It's to
yep.
start to, you know, really ramp up his competition and to see, is he a bottomless pit of talent? Where it's just endless, you know, an endless well. Or is it good matchmaking that makes this guy seem a little faster, a little better than he is? We're going to find out. I think we're going to find out a lot of those questions and a lot of those answers, rather, in this fight. And I think Eloy's got a nice skill set. He's not your standard boxer. He knows how to adjust. He could punch a little bit. He's certainly discovering that. And we don't know if Broner can take a punch. We're going to find out. So, yeah, dude, I think this is a really good fight. It's an under-the-radar fight.
It
is. It's not one of those, you know, it's not Pacquiao-Mayweather, but it's a fight that I think is going to be really fun.
It's going to be really fun. Let's call him in. Let's talk a little bit about how fun this fight's going to be between those two combatants when they step in February. Let's see if we can get Eloy right now. I was blown away when I found out Eloy Perez spoke Spanish when he was on Noche de Boxeo.
Like, really good Spanish, too.
Yeah.
Not like my Spanish. Oh, God. Really? Somebody actually put up a free Floyd Mayweather shirt. Where's the Stop Beating Women, Floyd shirt?
Eloy can't come to the phone right now.
All right, well, we'll try him again right now. Let me try him one more time. See if we can get Eloy Prince Perez here on the ring. Come on, Eloy. He's probably not going to, you know, I always have to text private number. But his publicist did let him know that we're going to. If not, like I said, I'll just text him.
No, I find listening to the ringing kind of soothing.
takes me back to the days when, come on, man, isn't she going to answer?
Wow.
Eloy can't.
I like that. Eloy can't answer your call. He is busy training for Adrian Broner. Let me text him and let him know that we are calling him right now to conduct our interview. Fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can while I'm trying to get a hold of Eloy Prince Perez. You can call in at 347-215-7598. Hey, let's talk about Jermaine Taylor and Andre Durrell. They were on Showbox before the year ended. What was your guys' thoughts about that? Obviously, you're going to hear our thoughts about those two when they entered the ring. I'll go with Gabriel first, man. What were your thoughts about Andre Durrell saying that, I'm back. And I was just really like, you're not back anywhere until you fight somebody worthy.
You know, I always hate to, I don't really hate because I actually do it on a regular basis, but I hate to say a fight looks fixed, but that fight looks fixed. He takes one shot, kind of rolls around. Ref, you know, Jack Reed, who I don't think was in on it, kind of looked like, you know, confused when the towel came in, throws it back out.
Yeah,
there
was a lot of confusion.
The fight, and they do. It was one of the weirdest endings to a fight I've ever seen. It just felt wrong. And if I was a warrior, I wouldn't, off of that, be saying, I'm back, you know. Sorry, but, yeah, we're going to need to see another fight. And I would like to see the MRI, the X-rays.
Never going to happen.
Yeah, all these neurological issues and all that. I mean, Showtime, I just don't understand what went wrong here. They kind of screwed up your tournament and then came back on your network on a really – It was Shambox. It wasn't Showbox. It was really just a poor night of boxing, in my opinion. I thought Taylor looked okay. He looked more relaxed to me. His footwork seemed better. He kind of kept himself in the center of the ring by turning his opponent. But, you know, it was Jesse Nicklo. Let's see him do it against somebody else. And then that first fight was an abomination. The Irish Cuban guy who just got all Cuban.
God, that was
all the worst part of Cuban. Yeah, I was like, set me on fire and push me off a cliff. This is horrible. All in all, I was like, well, that was kind of like, you know, ending a really good year with a shart. But, you know, that's just me.
Man. My thoughts were like, I don't know. You know, I mean, I was hoping to see something good, you know, at least something competitive. We didn't get that, obviously. We ended up getting something that was just more or less set up for these two guys to have their comeback and have their moment. Jermaine Taylor, I'll go with his fight first off, okay? His fight there. Yeah, did we know he had a good jab, but did I see any real changes? I didn't see a whole lot, you know? I saw him fight a smaller guy, which we've seen him do to Kasim Uma. He had a lot of great success with a shorter guy with short arms. But I also saw which I was really kind of turned off with was when he would when he hit the guy after the break, when he was basically cussing him out when, you know, they stopped the fight. I don't know. I don't know why he was ticked off at the dude. He was winning the whole fight. You know what I mean? I was a little puzzled by that there. You know, I don't know if that was a new persona that he was grabbing a hold of and was like, look, I'm going to show everybody, you know, I'm back and I'm ready to do this. Until they give us somebody that can really fight back, really fight him and show us that after that fourth or fifth round, he doesn't gas out. He doesn't fade. Then we'll start talking. But like I said before, you can really up a guy in the gym and get him back in the condition, and you can have a layoff for a few years and stuff. But if that chin is still, man, you know, if it's still touch and you still fall, there's just no way of correcting that. You can't fix that.
No, not really. If you have a bad chin, if somebody touches you and you go down like that, you're probably stuck that way. I don't see that he healed or – I didn't see anything different about Jermaine Taylor, did you?
Not really.
I mean, he still kind of leans over that front foot. He still touches his nose right before he throws the jab. He kind of has that low lead hand for whatever reason. I don't know. And
Other than that, he seems more relaxed.
He still jackknifes with that jab, too. He really jackknifes with that jab. That's what I'm saying. I know Pat Burns was, you know, everybody was excited to have Pat Burns back on and et cetera. You know, oh, he's back with them. I was like, you know what, if bring Freddie Roach and Emmanuel Stewart were there too with them as well. I mean, guess what? You're going to still see the same guy. I saw the same dude, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah,
so
pretty
I wasn't,
much. I mean,
yeah.
We're not going to find out anything until – that's what I mean. You know, with Chris Areola, here's a guy that went off TV all year. It was like, you know what? I'm not ready to be on TV right now. You know, I've got to be off. He had a couple – you know, I think he had like one telefutura or whatever. And he was on ESPN. It was like a Friday Night Fights. But he had six fights, something like that. And he was off TV. He was fine with that. You had to catch him on Mexican TV or a stream. He went lower profile because he realized these fights aren't really for mass consumption. This is for me to try to retool. That's what pisses me off is that, you know, Showbox is about young up-and-coming guys. It's not a date for anybody to just grab and do a comeback fight. You want to do a comeback fight, promote it. You know,
absolutely.
Do a night of returning stars and put that card on and put some money into it and do your own independent pay-per-view. Don't steal a Showbox date that should be for young up-and-coming guys and so you can put yourself on there. And they're like, oh, it's not about the money. We're not making that great of money. I'm sure you're making better money than guys that are normally on Showbox. So don't give me all that. I know Andre Durrell isn't going to be working for like 25 grand or 5 grand. So don't cry me the river. You're making more than I am. So, you know, you're not making some great sacrifice by being on Showtime. In fact, I thought all of us sacrificed our time by watching you on Showtime.
Exactly. That's exactly how I felt, you know. I mean, I almost felt a little embarrassed that I was going to sit down and tweet out that I'm watching the Showbox with Andre Durrell and Jermaine Taylor on the same bill, you know? You know,
I got a stay of execution. Somebody else volunteered to do the fight report. So I was like, sweet. You know, I can watch it, but I don't have to relive it on paper, like, right afterwards. That'll be
and
great.
You know what? I got to say this, too. Was it really fair to make comparisons to Durrell's injury to Jermaine Taylor? Jermaine Taylor was clearly knocked out. Okay, he was clearly hurt. He clearly was, you know, put under medical observation. He should not have
There's
been
medical evidence of his injury.
Exactly. Where Durrell was more of a, it was a farce. Come on, man.
Well, I feel much more confident saying out loud on the radio that I've heard in more than one place that it was about the money and that they didn't want to take another loss to Andre Ward. I've heard that enough places that I can say. Well, if you don't think that's true and you don't like me saying it, then show me the damn medical records and prove to me that you were injured. Because that's all I've ever heard is that they bowed out and it was about the money. And they were going to wait as long as it took and then pass some tests and go right back to work. I've been told that multiple sources. And that's what I saw over time. That's what I saw play out. So if I'm wrong, prove me wrong.
Right. And he pulled out of the fight when he was going to be at the Agua Caliente with Arthur Abraham. So to suggest that he did it again, come on. We're not way off.
Well, all those people that say, well, Margarito got caught once, so he must have been a cheater his whole life. They're the same people that are jumping on our backs for saying he faked it. Well, he faked it before. So why wouldn't he fake it twice? You know, when it was almost assured, you know, it wasn't an assured loss. I thought he'd be a problem matchup for Ward. But he didn't want the fight. He didn't want to do the fight. That's what I've been told by, like, three separate sources. You know, three of the people that weren't hanging out at the same time with me at the bar or wherever it was that we were talking. But, like, in three different locations on three separate dates, people have, without really even being prompted or asked about it, the subject comes up, and that's the same story I've heard. So if I'm wrong, prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I kind of just don't want to see him. It just I felt like, I don't know, it was weird. And then for him to be talking like, well, you know, I should be right back at the top of the rankings. I'll be fighting for a title.
You came in through the back door, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You came in through the back door. How do you get to sit in the house that these other guys work for in buying, and you come in as a partner that put nothing in the pot? That's what I don't get about that guy, you know, saying I'm back and blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. the only people that agree with you that you're back are is your circle. That's it. Other than that, there's a lot of proving to do. And I even tweeted to him was that until you fight Andre Ward, then you're back. Because right now, he's the man you need to beat.
Yeah. At least Lucien Bute, okay, he was fighting a lesser class of guy. But at least he was fighting. He wasn't faking an injury.
Exactly.
This to me, and, you know, I'm not saying he faked the Arthur Abraham thing. Make no mistake. I thought he got clocked and he went out. I thought he was legitimately hurt. And his reaction afterwards of saying, like, what the hell happened? I lost. Like, no, you didn't. All that scene, that seems very real to me. But just afterwards, and maybe he had a lingering effect. Maybe he had a dizzy spell here and there. But all I'm saying is this. Show me the proof. I think we're entitled to that.
Right.
There's nothing. If you faked an injury before, you can't turn around the next time and tell me, hey, take my word for it. Sorry, I can't do that. You know, because you lied before, and you said you lied before. So, show me the proof, and we'll move on.
I don't know why that. Why is that medical record so secretive? Why is that kind of put into the classifieds of things? You know, it's almost like we're asking him to identify the murderer of, you know, John F. Kennedy or something. You know, just show it. What do you think we're gonna find? Do you have syphilis or something that you don't want us to be aware of? I mean, just show the damn record and prove a lot of us that we're wrong.
It's behavior. I mean, like, if you ask Jermaine Taylor about his injury, he'll probably be a little defensive in terms of saying, well, I'm okay to fight now. But he'll talk to you about the injury and what he went through in the hospital in Germany. If you ask Margaret Goodman, why did you start VADA and drug testing and where did that journey begin? She'll be able to tell you. If you ask Andre Durell about it, I got to talk to my lawyer. Same thing if you ask Floyd Mayweather, why did you start this whole drug testing crusade? He'll get all angry and start putting his hands on you. It's behavior. And you got to look at that behavior and go, whoa, what do you got to hide, man? And to me, one person acts like they got something to hide, or two people in this case, and the other two people are very open about what it is they want to do. They're obviously telling the truth about their situation. I think it's just that simple.
It's absolutely.
Behavior.
Yep.
So are we gonna give up on Mr. Perez? We're coming up against.
You know his. I spoke to his PR when you were talking. I put myself on mute and I talked to her. She's
never
trying to get a hold of
me anymore.
And then
what happened?
She's trying to get a hold of him. I don't know what happened. But she definitely tried to get a hold of him. So as soon as she can get a hold of him, he'll be on and we'll talk to him. If not, we do have our scheduled interview with Adrian Broner at 7:00 and we'll just have to conduct that. Fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. We can talk about anything here on Leaving the Ring. Let's not talk about Floyd Mayweather going to jail. No, I've heard enough about it. I really don't care. It's only 90 days. The dude's not going away for 9 years or 34 years or for life. He got a slap on the wrist, on the hand, wherever you want to call it. He got good game. You know that slapping between the butt cheeks, what the football players do after they score at a goal? He got good game. Here, good game. You walked away clean. So there's no reason to really talk about it. It's 90 days. Nothing's going to affect. That's not going to affect his career. It's not going to do anything to his career. What if anything? It's just going to be something to talk about in the bar. You know, hey, did you hear about Floyd? Pretty boy, call him. Don't drop the soap. Mayweather now. Oh yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, got 90 days. That's the conversation.
That's true. I mean, well, he got more than that, but I think he got 6 months, but you know, three of it is suspended. So
it's suspended. Yeah,
it's not gonna affect his. People are like, how is he gonna be when he gets out of jail? Probably a little tripped out because he just went to jail. But other than that, you know, I think he'll make the adjustment to his Ferrari just fine. You know, I think he'll be okay. And, you know, he'll go back to the books and he'll probably throw a party. He'll let us all know that, you know, because of my hard time in jail, I need to take a tune-up and maybe some time with my family. Who gives a shit at this point?
Yeah, worst case scenario, he comes out a Muslim, you know, and continues on with his boxing career, man.
Or white supremacist. You know, one or the other. He could go white supremacist.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know. Pretty boy,
you know,
Floyd Mayweather, money.
He comes out and he doesn't beat women anymore. That would be awesome.
I think that's one thing that people need to take a look at. Like, how is it going to affect him? Well, hopefully it teaches him not to hit women.
Exactly.
I don't know. That's just me. But personally, I'd rather think of relevant fighters and guys that are actually moving the sport forward. And these two guys keep us in such a standstill. That's what drives me crazy. It's what De La Hoya used to do when everybody was chasing his ass. People didn't seem to do it as much with Roy Jones. He was kind of doing his own thing, and there's really nobody around him to get at him. But they chased Floyd, and they chased Manny, they chased Oscar, and it always just seems to slow things down. There's plenty of good fights, like the fans that have called in tonight have mentioned. You know, there's a lot of round robin to go on, and if Pacquiao and Mayweather don't really want to be a part of that, well, then screw them. You know, I'd rather deal with the guys that do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's so many other fights out there that we could be talking about. For instance, you know, I got to say, I thought that, you know, Wilmar Lopez taking on, again, Orlando Salido is a brave, brave move for him. You know, I don't think he's going to win it, but I thought it's a brave move, you know. And then the good thing about it, on Friday, tomorrow, we got ESPN back. They're back in action with Alfonso Lopez and Dyer Davis. You know, Steve Martinez from Lou DiBella. This is a very high-taught prospect that they've been talking about. He's going to be fighting Mamba's boy, Dennis Duglin. He got some good things, you know. And then you got on the same night on Showtime, Luis Ramos Jr. from the Espinosa Boxing Club. He's going to be on. And with Michael Perez on the undercard. Frankie Gomez is not going to be televised, but you got some good fights coming up just to start up. Not mega fights, but to start off the new year that can really get you to have a conversation and going, man, we're going to be starting off pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. The season's beginning again. I think that Dyer Davis fight's going to be fun. I had a chance to talk to him last night. You got Louis Beltran, Ray Beltran taking on Louis Ramos. I think that's a really fun fight. I think it's going to be an action fight. Beltran's kind of getting that point where it's like now or never, man. You know, you got to take out one of these young guys and make a move. A little robbed in his last fight. Now he gets a chance to get some get back and take it out on Louis Ramos, who, you know, is a young guy. I mean, I think it's a perfect test for him. I'm not sold on Louis. I think he's a really fun fighter. He's an action fighter. I don't know about the power, and I don't know if he'll be able to keep Beltran off of him. I think he's going to use his speed, his angles, and his boxing skills in order to get this thing done. But I'm going to be there ringside for this one. It's going to be a fun fight. I mean, Michael Perez is another one against Omar Figueroa. That's a really, really fun fight. And, you know, I always enjoy watching Frankie Gomez live because anything can happen. So all in all, that's a really good card.
You know, and that's a kid there that really needs to really step up. And, you know... We talk about prospects.
He's 12-0 now. He's 12-0 now.
Great. Hey, let's patch in somebody from England. Let's patch in our brother from England here who's been on hold. Hey, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
How y'all doing, man? Happy
doing
New
good.
Year.
Happy New Year's. Happy New Year's. You know what? They just put just listening on the on here for me as a note. They didn't say you wanted to be patched in, so I apologize, man, for having you on hold for so long.
Now, that's cool, man. I've been enjoying the discussions as usual. I just wanted to talk a bit about what you were saying when I first called in about the problems with MMA with boxing. Honestly, Dave, you mentioned this a couple times. And I think that really outside of the U.S., this isn't really as much of an issue. I mean, you can't really compare. You know, the notoriety of a Vladimir Klitschko with Junior Dos Santos or Pacquiao with pretty much anyone in MMA. But in terms of the U.S., I really think that a lot of the problems have to do with talent. And I think that the UFC benefits from the fact that in the past, you know, guys who were in college wrestling, high school wrestling, they didn't really have any professional outlet for their talents. But since that's come around, you've got guys able to go through the NCAA system where they can benefit from a free education, you know, through scholarships. That's obviously important to people in tough economic times. And when they finish through that system that trains them all the way through, I mean, there's an avenue, mixed martial arts, that they can benefit from. I mean, you look at Rashad Evans, John Jones, Cain Velasquez, what do these guys all have in common? What they have in common is that they're all North American, they're all former college wrestlers, and they're all from ethnic groups that in the past you would really have associated with being involved in boxing.
Right.
I really think that if boxing really is going to take off as it has in other parts of the world, it's really about developing the amateur system. I mean, in other countries, there's really not that much of an economic disadvantage in terms of going into boxing as opposed to other sports. I think that if you're a 13 or 14-year-old kid and you're thinking of what combat sport to go into, you're really going to be likely to look at wrestling and then the mixed martial arts as you know, economically viable, you know, beneficial, because you're taking advantage of free college if you could get a scholarship. And look, UFC doesn't pay out what boxing does on the highest level, but, you know, they see it as a financial thing. In terms of promotion, I don't know if people really, they often say, oh, well, UFC is the model. I don't know if it is the model. You know, I don't really think people are going to want to have an HBO heavyweight champion of the world or a Showtime heavyweight champion of the world. I think that that's pretty much the equivalent, would be the equivalent if boxing followed that model. And just finally, to talk a bit about something that Gabe's always writing and speaking about, I think that boxing has a real opportunity to separate itself from UFC and martial arts, if they really clean up the sport and follow through with this VADA and drug testing.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, MMA, UFC is rampant. I mean, drugs, steroids, it's a joke. I mean, this last major fight that they had between Lesnar and, what's the guy's, Overeem.
Right.
I mean, up until weeks before the fight, there were real questions if that was going to go through because, I mean, both guys, people thought that they might fail drug tests, you know? So, I mean, I'd just like to hear what you guys think about that, and I'll just listen now.
Well, I think, you know, MMA hasn't really jumped on the whole blood testing thing. They've been very quiet about it. And I think the reason is because if they start drug testing, or blood testing, rather, MMA, that might shut that sport down. I think there's a lot of guys doing things that they shouldn't be doing in that sport. I mean, it's no coincidence that the first sport, at least combat sport, that's been asking for the testosterone exemption, you know, the health exemption, which is, I think, in some circles we would kind of joke privately. I mean, I don't want to label all of them juicers, but if you're asking for testosterone replacement therapy and you're barely in your early 30s, odds are you probably did a lot of anabolics in your 20s and burnt out your system. You need this in order to generate some testosterone. It's just cause and effect right there. I think it's their dirty secret, and they don't want blood tests. I think that's going to be the hardest thing that Margaret Goodman and VADA face, or really any drug testing system that tries to be implemented, is that, particularly hers, because it's voluntary. Guys want to come forward. They want people to come forward on their own. But the commissions aren't looking to implement this because they understand how much money combat sports brings to the desert there, you know, particularly Nevada. Vegas is a mecca for both UFC and boxing. If they started doing these blood tests all the time, they would lose some stars, I think. We would lose some fighters. So it's going to meet some resistance. I think it's probably the only way it can succeed is if it's going to be a volunteer program where people sign up themselves. And we circumvent the commissions that are generally controlled by the politicians and by money, by the promoters.
Now, I want to touch a little bit on that, what you were talking about, you know, with the college and the wrestling and whatnot, with boxing, you know. You know, the thing is that you made a lot of great points, okay? But when it comes down to where we really get our crops of fighters, young fighters, in the amateur program and being cleaned up, like you mentioned. Of course, I think every sport has to have some type of regulation, has to be cleaned up in some areas. You know, and boxing has a little bit more of a spill that we got to mop up. But as long as we have other countries, and even like Northern and Southern California and other spots, you know, with sporadic in the United States, where you still have the ghettos, and the kids, they can't afford to go to karate classes or any of these other type of classes, because the fact is that it takes money to learn ninjutsu. It takes money for judo and karate and what other other type of combinations of combat sports you got to gather up in order to move into the to MMA world. Boxing still has a very, very strong thread of potential filters of fighters coming through the sport. Not only with that, I look at is when I go to a gym, I look at fathers and a lot, and this is surprising, a lot of mothers taking their children to the boxing gym. For one, it's cheaper. For two, if you speak to these parents, it always comes down to, well, I just figured because my dad or my grandfather loved boxing. It's really just kind of fall into a tradition, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. This the sport of MMA, it has been coming up. You got to applaud it. We've recognized the marketing part of it. But let me ask you this. And uh-huh. I've even asked some MMA fighters, and they kind of, you know, they'll show me a smile, and they'll be like, well, I'm going to say it, but you're not going to tell everybody I said this. And I said, no, I won't mention your name. But I asked you this. What sounds more appealing, the heavyweight boxer of the world or the heavyweight MMA of the world? Because right now, the receiving of these heavyweights from the MMA, UFC, I'm sorry, they just do not walk around like kings. They're still very unnoticeable.
That's exactly what I was saying. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not a fan of MMA, and I'm always getting into arguments with people about MMA and boxing, but you're absolutely right. The thing is, though, is what I was saying is that in the U.S., the guys that are going into MMA are coming out of college wrestling, right?
Right.
And I really think that if you had college boxing, right, offering scholarships to people, that you'd have a lot more people going into boxing, and the U.S. would be able to compete with these other countries where amateur boxing is pretty much subsidized.
The only thing, though,
in a lot of countries,
right.
you're getting stipend every month, you're getting benefits, and that's why these guys stay in the amateur game longer and really learn their craft. You know?
Right.
Right now, that's not really happening in amateur boxing, at least in the United States.
Well, no, absolutely, you know, but it goes back to with, you know, when you mentioned that there is no programming college, there are, but it's very few. I think there's only like, what, two or maybe three in the United States that do give a scholarship for boxing. But also, too, is that guys that do go to college and stuff, they're looking for another type of contract in the sport. They're looking at, you know, basketball to football. Now they're educated. We're fighters, where we get our fighters and why we fall in love with fighters like Roberto Duran and Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. is because these guys, they fought their way out of poverty. And that's how we have these fighters that have that mentality, is fight to the last moment, fight to that last minute. I think that in a lot of ways that we won't be able to find those same fighters. You know, these kids that we do get, a lot of our fighters – is because they need to fight themselves out of a situation. Not saying that the guys that are going to college are not doing the same, but I think that's just the roadmap that a lot of other people won't want to change. You know, it's almost like Nevada testing. You know, we talked to Margaret Goodman. I said, you know, what makes you think that you're going to change a big part of the system when a lot of these guys, the key players, they're kind of happy with the mess in boxing because it's a lot easier for them to keep their fingers in the bowl.
Yeah, I got to agree with that, except for obviously the fact that both Roberto Duran and Julio Cesar Chavez were Latin Americans. So I think that definitely still exists there. I mean, I'm from Central America,
right.
And I know that people back home, you know, they get into boxing for those financial economic reasons, but. I don't know. You know, I've got family in the States. I spent some time there in the past. Is that really the primary motivation of guys getting into boxing over there these days? I don't really know. You know, that might have been from another era. I don't know if, you know, guys like Andre Ward got into boxing because, you know, they were trying to get out of poverty. That might have been true with Lamont Peterson. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's something we could really generalize about. But, you know, I just think that, you know, it's such a great sport, and we've got to think about new ways to get talent especially in the U.S., really involved in it from an earlier age. You know, that's just my opinion on it.
Right. Absolutely, brother. You know, I don't know. I still think that there's a great part of – not well, not a great part. Let me take that back. I still believe there's a minority part of the states that still have that poverty-stricken where kids do. I mean, if you talk to Frankie Gomez, when we had a chance to speak to him, you know, and asked him, you know, why did you turn pro? The honest part of the kid was because my family need money, you know? I need to move them out, and they're the main source to these kids. Sometimes are a little bit in the same source, main source that need to get out of get their families out of poverty. You know.
Can I ask you all one question before I sign off?
Go for it.
There was an earlier caller, Daryl, I think his name was.
Yes.
And he proposed a tournament. Personally, I know Steve Kim last week. He was on your show and he was. Kind of calling it fantasy matchmaking and boxing, blogging and whatever it is. But
right.
Honestly, that's part of what makes the sport kind of interesting to a lot of us hardcore fans, you know.
Right.
For sure, these matches often don't come off. I like this idea a lot. I don't know if numbers necessarily work out. But I put together a quick one myself just to see what y'all think about it. But it's in the light heavyweight division. See, I got Hopkins and Dawson, Pascal and Cloud, Cleverly and Erdai, and Diakonu and Shumanov. So those would be four matches. And the format I propose is that the first round you have those matches. The second round you have the winners fighting the losers. So that way you have championships at stake in both the first and the second round. And then the winners obviously fighting each other. I just thought I'd throw that in there before I sign off.
I like that. The only problem is, like I said, we go back and forth. It's with some of the key players there, what you talk about, Bernard Hopkins, is he willing to pay fair with the rest of the guys? Obviously, he believes he's on the upper scale. And then you bring in the promoters, you know. I like the idea.
Bernard ain't fighting any of those guys. Bernard's going to look for the guy that...
Exactly.
Exactly. A buddy of mine said yesterday, who's a Hopkins fan, John Novoselic, who's a writer over DoghouseBoxing.com, and he said, he thinks that the fight that if Hopkins wanted to go out on a high note, perfect fight, revenge match, fight Taylor a third time, do it at 170, call it a day. Hopes to make a lot of money.
Right.
You can do it as a TV fight. You don't necessarily have to do it as a pay-per-view. But, I think, and I kind of agree with him, that Hopkins might kick Taylor's ass at this point. And I think that's kind of a viable fight. I mean, there's really,
yeah.
Other than I'm the only guy on the planet that wants to see Chad Dawson fight Hopkins again because I want to see him finish the job. And anybody that makes Bernard Hopkins as scared as he appears to be want to fight, that's the guy I want to see Hopkins fight. To be quite honest,
I second that.
He's afraid to fight Chad Dawson. He's afraid of him. Doesn't want him. So make that fight first. If you can't do that, then cash out and cash out with Taylor, and you guys both just wrap your arms around each other, jump out the plane. We'll have a parachute waiting for you down below, and you guys will be done. And then we can move on to viable fighters and get back to the business of a young man's sport.
Exactly.
But that's just me. I'm in a grumpy mood. I quit smoking.
Hey, thank you, brother, again for calling in. I appreciate it. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
Definitely, my man. And great show as usual. And I know it's going to be a good year. You know, there's a reason I stay up until 4 to do work on Friday morning.
Absolutely, man. I agree. You take care.
So you can hear about Floyd going into jail for the first time today? Or is it for our show?
You take care.
It's going to be a good year, though. I take care, man.
All right, later.
All right.
Okay, fight fans, if you want to call in,
315-7598.
The PR of Eloy Perez told us that he's ready, but I think we have Adrian Broner that's scheduled on next. I see a lot of calls are on hold. I apologize. We're going to try to get through the interviews and get folks on to speak to us here on Leave It in the Ring. They want to talk boxing? Of course, that's exactly why we're here. They talk boxing. Gabriel, are you patching in Adrian Broner, or do we still have enough time to patch in another fight fan that's talk boxing here?
He's supposed to be calling me, so that caller, if we take him, has to know that he may just get cut off.
Hey, I'm wondering if you'd be fine if we him and Eloy Perez on the line.
I don't know. I'm kind of doing this through a third party. I might like texting directly with him. So right now I'm just trying to find out if he's actually going to call. I don't know if I'd be able to set that whole thing up with all of us on the line. We could ask him when he's on, and we could bring him on, and bring Eloy on, you know?
Yeah.
It might get too involved to play telephone this way and ask and try to get, you know, permission to do that. I think it'd be kind of interesting.
I think so, too. We haven't done that in a long time. You don't have both fighters on, except for when we had Isaiah Smith and Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen. You know,
I doubt very much
they're going to get ugly like that, tell you the truth. You know,
oh, God, yeah. We don't have to do that again. Yeah. Jesus, God. I just had a flashback of that. Yeah, it was Ishii screaming and Kid Chocolate going, why have you done this to me? And he's still upset about it. He's not following me. He's all mad at me now because I wasn't nice to him. I didn't kiss his ass.
Hey, he said that we entrapped him.
We entrapped him. It's true. He's
actually
doing 60 days with Floyd as well. We entrapped him. I wonder what he's fighting next. You know, he'll probably be fighting for the title before Martinez does.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Of course.
But that's another guy they don't really talk about. That's another the problem with Martinez is they wasted this year looking for those big fights. I would have gone after some of these guys when they were a little bit green, you know. I mean, Macklin's a very tough fight. He's not green, but you know, that there's that Gregoris Proxa guy who's only getting better. Kennedy Golovkin is only getting better. Pirod, he's a little bit older. He's 31. So, you know, we'll see what the ceiling is on him. But at some point, he's going to have to deal with these guys now. And
absolutely.
And him is kind of turning the bloggers against themselves by saying, you know, Martinez has the ring belt, so now he has to fight only the best fighters, which I don't think even Steve believes that, but he's kind of rubbing it in their face. you know, I think he should have eschewed all the belts and just kind of went. The ring belt doesn't mean anything. That's why I don't really understand why he kept it. But, you know,
I know.
Fighters like belts, and it was a big move to not have any belt at all.
Yeah, it takes up space.
Off,
you know that? It takes up space over there on the dresser drawer or, you know, shelf it up. But let's patch in a fight fan really quick while we're waiting for Adrian Broner. Let's go with Frank and Eddie, who wants to talk everything in boxing. What's up, brothers? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? How's everything, man? Enjoying the
good,
show
man.
So far, man. I kind of got mixed up. Your producer came on, said, what do you want to talk about? I said, hey, I just tuned into the show. But I see you guys got some great stuff on tonight, man. Adrian Broner, and just to talk boxing, I was just saying, man, what do you guys think of Adrian Broner? I guess to warm him up before he comes on the show.
Trying to figure out how I feel about Adrian Broner. You know, I watched a lot of tape of him early on, his prospect fights. I was very impressed. But I kind of saw a guy that didn't have to me, I was for a beginning, middle, and end with a fighter. You know, they start out with the jab, start to work towards the body. And that's kind of their beginning. Then the middle of the fight should have something. And then there's the finish. You know, how do you close, whether that's the fourth round or the 12th round. And with him, I kind of see a lot of athleticism. I don't see a lot of beginning, middle, and end like tools. You know, a steady jab, steady body work. I see a lot of athlete that knows how to fight really well. I haven't really seen a full fighter yet. But that's going to come in time with tests, you know. I saw a little bit of it in the Ponce de Leon fight where he had to kind of figure his way out of things. But there I just saw a lot of deficiencies. And maybe he was a little tight on the big stage. I think maybe they would admit that. It's kind of early to tell, you know, really how I feel. The persona, I think I just get it right off the bat. You know, it caused a visceral reaction in me that he asked his father or demanded his father comb his hair before he was interviewed and then declared himself ready. It upset me at the time. And then when I kind of sat back, I said, well, he did his job. He got people talking about him in something other than just his fighting.
I liked it, man. He did his job well.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious, to tell you the truth. I mean, it was a little cheesy. Let's admit that. But I thought it was funny. It did definitely got everybody talking about it. You know, I got to agree with you. You know, with Broner, I kind of see an athlete struggling to want to be a fighter. And when he got in with Ponce de Leon, I still say that I think that they overlooked what Daniel Ponce de Leon was going to bring. Very awkward guy. Kind of hard to time because the way his boxing stance and the way he throws punches is not very traditional. You know, so he's a little weird. And you're looking at him and you don't think those punches are going to really look heavy and hard, but they end up being that heavy and hard that it just kind of gets you to go on a defense mode rather than an offense. You know, Broner knew exactly what he was getting involved with Litzau and the last guy he got in the ring, so he knew that he could bring out the fighter out of him to blow him out and get rid of him. With Ponce de Leon, you wanted the athlete and fighter to mix it up, you know, and he definitely knew how to switch it on and off. And a lot of times fight fans don't like that. They don't like switching on and off. They want you to come out exactly the way you should be. You're an athletic guy, but at the end of the day, you're still a fighter. But I do like the kid.
Well, you said, like, if you got Eloy Perez coming on, and, you know, if you look at, like, super featherweight, there's not too many, like, huge names. You got the Japanese guys that are tearing stuff up over there, I guess you could
right.
say. But a lot of people have Broner already number one at super featherweight. And I like him. I, like you said, with the hairbrushing thing, it's a nice little gimmick. I think it was kind of cool. It's some of the things that lack in boxing today to kind of get somebody to hate you, dislike you, you know, the face heel thing that you got in wrestling. It could be utilized in boxing and utilized in a good way. But you look at, I guess, a lot of people, and I like Broner. I think he's exciting. You know, he's going to have an off night every now and then. I don't, maybe not from this point on. But to safely say this young, even though he just picked up a strap, I don't know. I can't say he's number one at super featherweight. A lot of people are already saying this.
Yeah. There's no way. He's not number one. He still has got a lot to accomplish. Just like my partner mentioned, you know, he's been fighting some soft touch. Where Eloy Perez is not a well-known name either, but there's a kid that has been put up against where he was supposed to lose, you know. He was set up as an opponent, not set up to gain the belt. And he's really kind of followed that yellow brick road that we like our fighters to go through, which is fight their way to the top. And Eloy's definitely having a little bit more heavy on his side. But does he carry all the attributes that we like out of a fighter? Not really. He's a little slick. He's a little more cutie in the ring, and he doesn't pack a big punch. But I think he may be able to steal some fans with Adrian Broner because it is an appealing, and it's a very attractive match.
Yeah, I like it too, and he's an Al Haymon guy. It doesn't hurt to be an Al Haymon guy, you know,
right.
Especially this day and age. HBO seeming to like him. It's like him, and they got the tag team with him and Gary Russell Jr. And you know, I'm excited about him in a way. And again, you know, you never know. It could be. I hate to use Floyd Mayweather or compare anybody to Floyd Mayweather, but this could be like an early start to an eventual Floyd Mayweather. I mean, as far as the cockiness and the brash attitude that Broner has, and I mean, what are we going to do, man? I think it's like this: name value. I think by this time next year, as long as he keeps the freight train rolling and he's still undefeated, I think it's safe to say number one. I mean, I just keep everybody I have a conversation with about him. They're like, oh, he's the best super featherweight, and you know, again, Eloy Perez. I that's kind of a hard fight. Right there. I mean, it's a hard pick 'em right there because Eloy Perez is another one who is on the come up, basically.
Right.
Yeah, it's up for grabs at 130, and now it's, you know, belts or no belts. It's good that he picked up a belt and everything, but what it comes down to it is guys are going to need to carve out their space within 130. You're right. There's nobody clearly defined as the number one guy. There's guys with potential. There's no guy that says, I'm the best. And you're going to have to come see me. I think Broner does take his case in that he actually does draw in Cincinnati. He sells some tickets, and he's got the backing of HBO. So we're going to find out.
Yep, Absolutely.
All right, can I get one more, guys, real quick, one more. I want to our predictions here because this is a tough one. I'm having a hard time predicting this one. And, you know, it's almost prediction time for this fight. But Guillermo Rigondeaux and Rico Ramos, what do you guys like in that fight?
Man, that's a – you know what, bro? That's a tough fight right there to predict, to tell you the truth. I haven't really sat back and – man, that's a good match there.
I'm taking Guillermo by knockout, like eighth or ninth round.
Yeah, you know,
just, he's an overall. What this will show is the difference between American movers and quote unquote skill guys versus a real skill guy. Guillermo can fight on the inside. He can fight on the outside. Yeah, he can be boring. Like he was lulled into. We were all lulled into sleep watching him fight a counterpuncher, which people always discount. He was fighting a counterpuncher, folks, and that's what happens when two of them fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
They stare at each other and hope the other guy leads. In this case, I think he's. He's kind of understanding who he is, Guillermo, and that he's got to be entertaining, that he's got to bring it on TV in order for people to want to see him fight. I don't think Ramos is quite there yet. I think he's not as mature as Guillermo is, and I don't think he has the skill set. When he gets in close, he holds. When he gets on the outside, he's kind of moving and moving. There's a middle range that he likes to work in. If he can't get that, he's going to have some problems. Yeah, I just think that that Guillermo is way too good of a fighter for him, and he's got real power. He wants to show it. I think he breaks down Ramos and he knocks him out like 8 or 9. I like that.
I wouldn't pick a knockout. I'm kind of leaning towards Rigondeaux, but I'd say just a decision. I mean, you go, I guess, I don't know if I was the next one to cut in on this, but. Ramos does. He kind of have his moments where he can be a bit sloppy, and you know you got Rigondeaux,
the
greatest amateur fighters ever. Period. Coming in there, he's all ready for the pro game. Everybody's like a little suspectable about his coaching and stuff like that. The guy don't need to be coached. You know, the guy just needs somebody in there to motivate him in the corner. That's just my opinion. And yeah, I think I agree. The knockout. I don't know, man. That's. I'm gonna go with it. I think that man. If it's eighth round knockout, the next show after the fight, I will call in and I'm gonna telephonically bow down to you on such a great prediction. That's a rough one. I couldn't pick anybody. If anybody, I would think Ramos would throw a sloppy punch and maybe catch Rigondeaux and score a knockout. I think that's the only way I would think. But yeah, Dave, I didn't know, man. Go drop it in there. I know I kind of cut in there. I'm sorry.
Okay. No problem, brother. Hey, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold. Don't
guys,
hang
thanks
up.
Thanks so much, man. I'll keep listening, guys. Thanks so much for having me on tonight. Great talk.
No problem.
Hey, our pleasure. Take care.
All right, let's try Eloy Perez again. Let's see if he answers. And let's see what happens here. Come on, Eloy. They just told me you were ready. Yeah, you know, I can see that happening. You know, Rico Ramos getting caught, being dropped and knocked out. Eloy, is this Eloy Perez?
Yeah,
what's
going on?
¿Qué pasó, man? How you been, brother?
Bien, you know, Fernando, training hard.
Hey, I'm not going to match you with the Spanish talk, bro, because I heard you on Noche de Boxeo. You blew me out away. I was like, damn, I can't talk about, you know, Spanish with this dude. This guy can speak Spanish, you know? I got too much slang.
Yeah, I'm like, I get a fire buddy because I don't think I'm that good.
Hey, absolutely. Right now, we got live right now Eloy Prince Perez with us, who's got a fight coming up. What a very intriguing fight with Adrian Broner. Eloy, again, hey, welcome to the show. It's myself, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Leave it in the ring. Hey, tell me a little bit, man, how are you feeling about this fight here? I got to tell you, at first, when Sam Garcia was kind of telling me about it, I was excited, but I kind of held back because I was like, oh, man, I don't think they're going to take that fight. I don't think they're going to want to fight you. And guess what? They signed it, and now you guys are going to fight.
Hey, I'm going to fight Adrian Broner. I mean, I didn't think it was going to happen, but you know, I could give him props for you. Just give me the opportunity for it. And congrats. You know, I'm just training hard and doing my part. You know me.
Absolutely. You know, now when... You know, Eloy, when I mentioned it right away, you know, I threw it up there about the fight being made. You know, a lot of folks that know Adrian Broner, who's now become a little bit more popular, even with the last caller we had on with us, was saying that he's very surprised as well, saying that he's the best at super featherweight. And people are kind of perceiving that, well, he's going to blow you out of the water because, well, you're not a well-known name. And when you, I don't know if you've seen that or even heard of that. How does that make you feel? And how does that make your team think about where you're at in position-wise in the sport?
You know, I told everybody, good things take time, and they will know me after this. After I beat Adrian Broner, after I beat his ass, they're going to know Eloy Perez. But it's more, I show more motivation because, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, that people think that Adrian Broner is going to beat me or blow me out of the water, but it's more guys to prove wrong.
Good, Gabe.
What's up, Eloy? How you doing, man?
What's going on?
It's been a long time since we've talked, since yesterday. But,
right, you've been a stranger.
I'm trying to think of, I hate to ask you the same things like over and over again, but just looking at both of you guys, we were talking about this earlier, Broner and yourself. He's kind of come up and in his last two fights, you know, the last one particularly, he was kind of given a guy that just I'd never really seen. I don't think we'll ever see him again. And he was just blown out and dismissed, which was odd because he was fighting for a title.
Right.
Compare and contrast how you think he's been built versus how you've been built as a fighter. Or have you even really studied him that much?
You know, every fighter's career is different. To me, I feel like mine's been tough. You know, I had some, you know, weird fights, but I've gotten through it. You know, from now or from when the beginning of your career to now, for an opportunity like this, I mean, you can't afford to lose. So I mean, it's hard. But he's good too. I mean, he's fast, and he's been taken care of. You know, he has skill. That's why he has Al Haymon. But I mean, he's world champ, and I can't really say anything about him because he got it. He got the title.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't really matter how you got there. You guys are there now.
Yeah.
What's that?
You know, when you see Adrian Broner and you see him getting on the HBO spots and he gets a title shot, Eloy, and we've talked about this numerous times when you've been on Leaving the Ring, where you've kind of watched everybody get their shot. And now you're getting that shot. But you're almost like the step kid that is watching the favorite kid get all the things, you know. How are you feeling about that? I mean, that this guy is more glorified than you at this moment.
Hey, it's totally fine with me, you know. I'm gonna get my chance to compete at the level, and I mean, his mouth works. You know, he's a showman. You know, he's about entertainment. I'm more about, you know. My ambitions are different than his. You know, the title means more to me because, you know, I did it. I made it. You know, for him, it's about being the show. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm be focused. It doesn't matter if I see other fighters or they're on HBO. It doesn't matter to me. You know, I'm going to get my shot, and I finally got it, and I'm going to take advantage of it. But it's fine that everybody, you know, doesn't believe in me or, you know, doesn't think I can compete at the level because it's just more to prove.
It's almost like a deja vu for you, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it is. Yes, it is. Dang.
Speed for speed. Do you match him? Do you think?
I think yeah. I think we're both fast. It's gonna be about who. It's about mental. You know. It's gonna be. You know. He's patient. You know, he's gonna wait until I'm open and. I'm not just out hustling. I mean, I'm just not working. I mean, I believe my abilities are better than his, and I want it more.
Now,
he's quick, though. I mean, he's fast. I mean, he's a great fighter.
The difference I kind of see in you guys, I mean, you're a little more fundamental than he is. He seems to rely a little more on the speed and athleticism that he has in abundance. But that watching you over a long haul fight, you know, like the Rodriguez fight or even like this last one, Ira Terry, I can kind of see where you're going. You know, you're working to the body. You're kind of setting up other shots. If the single shot doesn't get him out of there, you're doing things to kind of set yourself up for success later on in the fight. Maybe I haven't seen enough of his fights to see that if he does that or not. But to me, that seems to be the difference, and it might be the difference in your fight that you seem to work a little more often than he does. But if people look at that Littow fight and they look at how it ended, I look at about two minutes of absolutely nothing happening and then an explosion.
Right, he just like the last fight, you know, he just, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He just waits, all these guys are right in front of him, and you can get easy for him. You know, he depends on his quickness, which works, you know, because they both threw at the same time, but he lands faster. But, I mean, I think it's just about, you know, the later rounds, and just, I think I just have more experience. You know, I've been there, and I, you know, I've had tough fights. So I think all my past fights are a blessing. You know, it's made me the fighter I am now.
Well, let me ask you this, because you fought big guys, you know, like David Rodello. And like I was mentioning earlier when we had a caller on that your career has been basically you've been set as an opponent, you know, where Broner's career is a little bit different than yours in terms of he's been set to be the victor every time out here. So being in preparation for this, because we have to admit this is a breakout for you if you are able to become victorious in this fight here. Is there a change in camp? I mean, are you guys doing anything a little bit different than what you've guys done in the past, or are you guys still sticking with staying in Salinas and coming down to Gilroy or going to other little spots around the bay?
We're going more rounds. You know, I'm going harder. I mean, I can't even lie to you. I'm going harder than, you know, Max plans. You know, I'm real focused. We're going to go to Oakland, release Sunday morning to start camp in Oakland to have Michael Dallas, and I have another kid from Colorado, or Denver, Ricky, I forgot his last name, but I brought him for sparring. I mean, I have a few guys, you know, that I know with speed, and then, you know, with Michael, he's so much bigger, and he has that reach where he makes me work. So, I mean, I'm going to have more guys, more sparring, and I'm just going harder. I mean, you know, I just got to give it my best and see what happens. I can't really tell you anything else besides just going hard. I mean, just
right.
Give it my best shot.
That power factor that most folks have talked about, we've seen you sit down on your punches a little bit more, you know, with your last outing. Is that power factor going to come and play with Broner, or do we see the slick Eloy Perez we've seen in the past? I mean, that to me is, I think Broner, if anything, he had problems with Ponce because he was hard to time, and he's a little bit more crafty. But when it comes to being really crafty in the ring, man, that really kind of favors you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be explosive. I'm gonna be fast. I'm gonna be busy. I mean, I'm gonna make him panic where he's losing the fight because he's losing rounds. I'm gonna make him come to me. That's, you know, and I'm just gonna play with, you know, mentally and physically. You know, I'm gonna just be better. I'm gonna make him panic.
Man, how excited are you about this fight, man? Because, you know, I got to tell you, brother, I'm really excited for you, man, to tell you the truth.
You know, it hasn't really hit me yet. You know, like Kathy, you know, my whole team, they're all very excited, you know, but I don't really show emotion, you know. It hasn't really hit me. I'm just focused on just getting better and getting in shape, you know, for February 25th. So, you know, everybody's excited. I mean, but I can't even tell you what emotion I have yet. You know, it hasn't hit me. It hasn't settled down. I'm fighting on HBO for the title.
Absolutely. Well, man, you know, we're going to be rooting for you. I hope you bring it back. I hope you take it. And I wish you all the success, brother. You know,
man, I appreciate it.
Time.
We're going to do it. We're all going to do this. You know, I win, we all win.
Absolutely.
You know, we're all in this together.
All right, man.
Crazy.
Well,
it's been a long road, man. It's been a long road getting here. We were talking about
it's been a long ass road. You know, it sucks. You know, I would tell myself, I hate my life. But really, you know, it's like depressing, but it's worth it, right? I mean, it sucks.
You hit all these little spots, and then where's my ranking now? You know, who do I got to beat? Okay, I beat that guy. Well, my ranking didn't change. You know, all that stuff. It's crazy.
It just hard, too. I mean, the journey is just tough. The fight's easy. And that's what I tell everybody. It's not even about the fight. That one night is, like, the easiest part. Like, you know, for me, like, I'm looking forward not for the fight. It's just the next day because I'm done. I'm left alone, you know? But we'll just see what happens. I hate my life. I hate my life.
You should change your nickname now. Eloy, I hate my life, Perez. There you go.
Uh-oh, now you got too many jokes.
All right.
Keep that.
That's funny.
Thank you, guys.
All right, man. You take care, brother.
All right, man. Take care. Good luck.
There you go. Eloy Prince Perez, man, hates his life getting a shot at Adrian Broner. The problem. Very interesting fight if you haven't had a shot to look at, to watch. Eloy Perez, man, you got to get on YouTube, Google his name, check out some of his fights. Now, you know, like I said, very slick, slick fighter. He's got great defense. Been sitting on his punches a little bit more, but it could also be the suggestion of his opponents that have been put in front of him. But, I've seen this kid spar. I've seen him spar middleweights. And when you look at him, a lot of people, the first thing they're saying, well, he doesn't carry a lot of power, blah, 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 blah. But I've seen this guy sit down on punches, and I've seen him push back middleweights. And this is something that Broner's team should really take concern in, because a lot of times where you see guys that don't have a lot of pop, they do carry a lot of strength. Come to mind to me right now, you just remember, like, you know, you think about Winky Wright doesn't pack a lot of pop, but man, his body carried a lot of strength where he was able to maneuver guys, you know, and put them in positions to land combinations, and he was a great counterpuncher, you know. So, I'm sorry, my son's right here interrupting me, grabbing me something, so he knocked my train of thought here. And that's Perez is one of those kind of guys. He's a big, yep, solid, super featherweight kid. He's a big, solid guy that does, technically, he does sound stuff that works very, very well for him. And he's very hard to hit, you know, very hard to hit. And Broner's going to find out. And I think this is a test of skill here for Broner. Is that speed? Can he use that speed intelligently? Can he put the muster behind the power intelligently to a guy that's going to be difficult and is going to be trying to counterpunch him all night?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. You know, I want to see what, like you said, you know, you take some rounds away from him, and can you get a guy that has that much confidence in himself to not be confident and to come forward in a fight and try to walk it down, you know? Guys like Mayweather, that kind of style, the defensive, you know, let you wear yourself out, and then I'll come in and kind of feed off your scraps. It's very hard for them to get them out of that game plan and make them become the hunter. I'm curious to see Eloy do it and kind of take the fight to him and not expend too much energy while doing it. You know, the guy that Broner beat, it seemed like he just, by like the third round, was like, all right, screw it. I'm not going to win this fight, but I am going to throw every punch I've ever learned for the next minute.
That was the thing. The last guy that he fought, that's where he fought, was I know I'm gonna go, but I'm gonna go with a bang. You know, I'm gonna at least try to land something there. I don't want to crap out. You
like,
know,
like the third round, bro. Like, calm down. You know,
yeah.
I don't even use the word bro, but this, you know, it kind of suits it. It's like, dude, just relax. You know, he threw everything in that minute, and then just got knocked out for his troubles. I guess maybe he just knew, you know, I don't really have anything, but maybe if I land something, and this was probably as least tired as I'm going to be, so I might as well throw it all now. I don't know. Terrible game plan, but he got knocked out. I don't think Eloy does that. I think Eloy's going to be a little more crafty. He's going to take his time. He knows he's got to get to that body to slow him down. I think that's what he's going to try to do. So it's going to be fun.
Yep, I think so. I'm really pulling for Eloy Perez.
Here he is. Hang on a second. I think this is Broner. I'll be right back.
We did have another guest scheduled, man. I'm going to have to probably text the PR for our next guest and hopefully let them know. We'll probably get them on a little later. Hate to do that, man, but we're running behind schedule. When, you know, we schedule them on a certain slot, and then when they don't come through, guess what? Leaving Ring's got to do what they got to do to make things work. So let's see what Gabriel comes back with. Gabe, you there?
I am here with the champ at 130 pounds, Mr. Adrian Broner. How you doing, man?
I'm all right.
Hey, real quick, man. Do you have the comb with you right now? Are you brushing your hair?
Yes. Yep, I did that.
You want to make sure that you're comfortable and well groomed, ready to go.
How you doing, brother? Happy New Year's. First off,
Happy New Year to you too, man.
I'm just confirming with Marcus, everything's cool. Let me start off right off the bat. Take us right back to that your title win, you know. Some people look at it as controversy. You're fighting for a vacant title. You didn't have to take it away from somebody. But for you, the fighter, you've been working your whole life for this moment. Does it change that at all? Or just to you, it's I'm winning a belt and that's all that matters?
To me, it was it really didn't matter who got in the ring that night. I was still going to be victorious, and it probably would have been worse if it didn't happen in the third round. It could have been worse for anybody. So I was just glad to get the victory, and thank God for the victory. So we're gonna move forward from there.
Were you surprised when he kind of? We were actually literally just talking about this as you called. It seemed like Rodriguez just kind of said, "Screw it. I'm going to throw every punch I've got, get this guy in the corner, and see if I just can't get a lucky knockout." Did that surprise you that he went all in that fast?
No, you know, when guys get frustrated in the ring, they tend to lose focus, and that's what they do. They get wild, and, you know, I'm a fighter where I look through all of that. You know, he was wild. He thought he had me in a rough spot, but, you know, I came up out like a champ I am, and I put together some good shots and set him up, and he fell for it.
And finished it, yeah, pretty fast. It was kind of reminded me of, like, I forget which Tyson fight it is, where a guy throws like 20 punches at him. Tyson just looks at him, throws one, and the guy's gone. You didn't really seem to even get hit by much. You were like kind of leaning back in the corner very high up. Right in a lot of what Floyd looks like when he's in the corner and somebody's just wailing at him. And he's not really getting hit. He's just kind of looking down at it like, what are you doing?
Yeah, man. When I first came to the gym, man, that's what I learned first. It was defense. And that's something I came very friendly with. You know, some guys, they let their offense be their defense. Well, I have both. So I got best of both worlds. I'm fast. I got the power, offense and defense. So, you know, I can really take on anybody at this stage.
You really think that, I mean, at this point, you're 22, you know, you're not, I mean, you're tested in that you've been in the ring and people have punched you in the face and you've won and you're undefeated, but you haven't been, you know, we haven't seen you in a knockdown, dragout kind of thing. Is that next for you? Do you welcome that kind of challenge? Somebody that, when the fight starts, fans have no idea who's going to win this?
Man, look, man, I make hard work look like easy work. I'm going to keep easy work. I work hard and get easy money. That's what I do. That's me. They say every fight from here is going to get harder, but I just make it look easy. They say I'm fighting nobodies, but I just make them look like nobody. You know, Eloy, he's a good fighter. I respect him. He's 23-0, 7 knockouts. You know, he's good. But at the end of the day, man, come on, he's not going to beat me. I don't care who is going to be February 25th. It don't have to be Eloy. It can be anybody. They're not going to beat me. I can beat anybody, and nobody's going to beat me.
I like your confidence, man. I really like the fact that you are very confident, and like you said, you know, you're willing to fight anybody. It doesn't matter. Let's talk a little bit about that Ponce de Leon fight. What happened there, you know, Adrian? Because everybody obviously was picking you to really kind of blow him out of the water, but you struggled with him. What was it about Ponce de Leon that kind of set you have a little bit of an off night?
For me, I looked at the fight. I could have did more, but at the end of the day, I did it. I had a great performance. You know, Ponce de Leon, he's one of the greatest punchers in the featherweight division. He's awkward. He's not the most skilled, but he's very rugged and awkward. And fighting a guy like that, he can sometimes make you look not as good as they say. You know, you can't just go in reckless on Ponce de Leon. You know, he throw wild shots. He throws shots from angles that regular fighters don't throw, so you really have to be careful and pick your shots, and that's what I did. That night for me, it was just my first time on HBO, get the win and go on to the next one, because in this game, as long as you get that W, man, that's all that counts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it did seem, I mean, that was a big leap in class for you, you know, considering where the guys you'd been fighting, and then boom, HBO, co-main event against the guys that
I mean, the guy had more knockouts than I had fights, you know.
Yeah, right.
People sometimes they don't look at all of the facts to the situation. You know, he was an Olympian. He wasn't just no guy just to walk over. You know, he was a solid tester matchup, and I learned from that. And all that matter is I stuck to the game plan. I did what I had to do, and I had fun.
How big do you think you can get? Not in terms of popularity. I mean, I think that time will tell that. The more guys you knock out in highlight reel fashion, and certainly they're building you as a draw. But in terms of your size, you kind of come from that generation, similar to myself and Dave, where we watched, you know, Mayweather grow up and Roy Jones, weight jumpers. Do you want to be a weight jumper and move to divisions and get titles and multiples? And how far can you go?
We definitely gonna get on top of a trampoline and jump as high as we can go. it really don't matter, man. At any weight, I'm still gonna be fast. I'm still gonna have the pop. I'm still gonna have the power. I'm still gonna have the speed, man. Yeah, these guys, they just not gonna beat me, man. They can't outthink me in there. I'm not. I just don't go in and throw punches. I don't do that. You can't. It's like these guys is playing checkers when I'm playing chess, man. They so many moves behind, you know. I'm just ready for whatever bring my managers and promoters bring to the table. I'm gonna be ready for it. I'm gonna go to camp. See Eloy. I hear that he's starting training camp January 9th for me, but I've been training, man. I was back in the gym on Monday after Rodriguez fight. So I've been ready. We can fight tomorrow, man. I can make weight next week. You know, I've been ready, man. Ready
how much
my middle name?
I thought it was the problem.
No, that's my alias. The problem
is alias. How much of Eloy, besides his record, how much do you know about him? Have you seen tape of him? And if you have, what are your thoughts?
Look, man, I don't watch these fighters. I don't have to do that because at the end of the day, a fighter fights one fight, but they don't go in the next fight fighting the same. So you just watching tape on somebody, that's not really going to do much because what you're watching tape on, he's not going to come in and do the same thing. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So basically, I just make sure I'm very, very well conditioned, very focused. Everything's on point, and I just go in there and do what I do. You know, probably the first couple of rounds, I make my adjustments. When we get in the ring, we're going to have to see what he can do. He's going to have to make me respect his boxing skills. Because right now, man, it's going to get real bad. I'm talking Sam Cassell ugly. I promise you, it's going to get very ugly in there February 25th. I mean, he's good. I'm going to always respect him for what he did in the game. He's 23-0. Seven knockouts, but at the end of the day, I got to destroy this guy, man. He's trying to take food away from my kids.
Did you just right. say it's going to get Sam Cassell ugly?
Yeah, Sam Cassell.
That's pretty ugly, man. That's not, yeah, Tyrone Hill might maybe a little uglier than Sam, but I don't know. I'm just looking at. That's interesting. I remember you. We talked to you the first time. I think you've been on the radio show before, and you talked about how you do pick your opponents in terms of you see the tape, you take a look at the guy, and give the nod yes or no. Did you do that in this case, or now that you're a title holder, is that a little bit less in your hands?
Right now in my career, every fight I learn more and more. You know, but I think I'm maturing in the class I'm in. You know, I'm maturing in the craft I'm in. You know, I'm just really finding myself. You know, and right now for me, I feel like it really don't matter who they put it in those four corners, man. I got something for anybody. You know, I'm a jack of all trades. I can do it all. If I got to sit down and bang for a couple rounds, I do that. If I got to box your head off, spin around, laugh at you, stick my tongue out at you a little bit, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm a master at this already. I'm only 22. I'm young, but I was schooled by the older dudes, man, and that's what make me so different.
Well, there you go.
Agent. I mean, with Mike Stafford and all those guys, you know, and Mike's your trainer. I had a really nice long talk with him about 3-4 weeks ago out here in L.A., and maybe 3 weeks ago. He just seemed, like you said, the old school guys. I mean, he understands how to build a guy from the ground up, what's actually important to a fighter's success and all that. Is that what's in the water there in Ohio? It's because it seems like there's a lot of really good boxers that are coming out of there. Rashee Warren, we had Chris Pearson on earlier, and now yourself. There's something going on in Ohio. It's kind of old school.
I don't know, man. I don't know if it's in the water or in the ribs, man. But Ohio definitely. I mean, Cincinnati definitely spit out a lot of talent, man. And I'm just happy I'm a part of the saliva.
Absolutely.
Are you guys gonna head back there more? Because I know you did your last fight there, but this fight's gonna be in Missouri.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Washington. You know, we're like the same. We can all relate. You know, rugged, Chicago. We can all relate. So going to St. Louis is what, 4 to 5 hours away. You know, I still feel like I'm at home. I mean, to be honest with you, it don't matter. It don't matter where you put me at. All I need is a punching bag and a ring and some gloves, and I still come out a world champion.
But in terms of just building your audience is what I was thinking, you know. But I guess, yeah, it's only 4 or 5 hours away. Are you starting to notice that? I mean, in general, because you did a lot early on fighting in your hometown. Is that something you want to do as a champion? So you can not only just be, you know, I think your style is going to be fun for ratings, especially the way, you know, your last two fights have gone. But in terms of also, you know, when it comes down to clout and negotiating, you can say, you know what, but I also bring asses live to the audience, you know,
right.
Put asses in the seats. Is that important to you as well?
That was the whole plan from the beginning. You know, we're going to keep fighting at home. When Golden Boy has a fight, we're going to fight, but we're going to keep fighting at home to build that fan base, you know, because a lot of fighters, a lot of champions, they can fight at home and probably won't even put 1,500 in the seats. You know, me, just my first HBO fight at home, I did good. I did more than good. You know, a lot of people came out. It was an exciting crowd, and I put on a great show. So the next one, it's only going to get bigger and bigger from here. You know, sky's the limit, and I'm skyrocketing, man. If you're not on this plane before takeoff, man, we're flying over you.
All right, brother. Well, good luck in February against Eloy Perez, and keep us updated. And thanks for coming on the show with us, man.
All right, and I'm going to correct you, man. I don't need luck because luck run out. I'm blessed.
I like that. All right. You take care, man.
Congratulations on the title, and have a hell of a new year. I really can't. I hope you fight often, and I hope we get to see it every time. Good luck to you, man. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. All right, thank you.
Take care.
There you go. A very confident Adrian the Broner, the problem Broner here on Leaving the Ring, saying
I need a brush.
You know, doesn't need luck because it runs out. He's blessed. Hey, really quick, we're gonna patch in a guest here on Leaving the Ring, and
my favorite line I think was, I don't know if it's the water or in the ribs. I like the way he looks at everything. It's interesting. I had to kind of, it was like I had like Floyd Mayweather flashbacks. I was like, oh, you know, handle the arrogance a little bit because he's young and this is his persona. You know, I'm not gonna jump on him. I'm gonna try to like start all over, have a fresh relationship with a young arrogant fighter.
I like that. I like the cockiness of a fighter when they do that.
You know,
it just makes it.
You still knock people out.
Good.
No. Yeah.
Exactly. you know?
Hello?
Hi, can I please speak to Andy?
This is Andy.
Andy, how you doing? My name's Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. This is Leaving the Ring Radio. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic. Let me let my audience, because I didn't even let them know we're going to patch you in. I wanted to be a little bit of a surprise. You're the father of Snooki, Nicole, that's on Jersey Shore, and you guys have kind of formed up a boxing promotion here. It's going to be, it's labeled the Booner and Cartoon Show, right? Is that correct?
Yes, we were on that show a couple of weeks ago. WFA.
My bad. That's not the headline for the fight. But you got the Highland Brothers that will be headlining the fight for you guys at the Resort Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Saturday, January 28, 2012. Hey, let me ask you, how did this form about? How did you and your daughter decide to come up with a boxing promotional company called Final Round?
Well, we were approached by Final Rounds Promotions.
Mm-hmm.
Who was owned by Mike Pascal and Brian Burke, and they had come to us and had asked if we would be interested in getting into boxing promotion. And my daughter and I sat down and we talked about it, and it was just another venture that she would have liked to, you know, would like to get into, because she is very active in, you know, when she was in school with gymnastics and cheerleading and everything else, and she thought it would be a real great opportunity, and we sat down and ended up partnering up, and my daughter started Team Snooki Boxing, and now she is with Final Rounds Promotions.
Now, Team Snooki Boxing here, because you mentioned gymnastics, that's really far from boxing. Are you a boxing fan? Is she a boxing fan? Or is this just an opportunity that you guys said, hey, this is pretty good, we can make some money here by getting involved with Final Round?
No, I don't. I mean, obviously, everything has something to do with money, but she's very active in participating in like I said, gymnastics and WWE and everything else. And I sort of kind of like boxing also. You know, I didn't watch it all that much, but, you know, as you get older, you sort of kind of calm down a little bit. And, I find it very interesting. And I just thought it was a good venture that we could get into. And, also with the Star Highland Brothers that we have coming on board. I mean, it was just phenomenal. I mean, it was a great opportunity.
Now, with this opportunity here with the Highland Brothers, if it's all good and the success is well, because I believe it's going to be what, a pay-per-view type of event. You got to go to behindthering.com to purchase it for $9.99. If it's successful, do you move on to something, or is this a one-time deal to see whether or not this is something you guys want to play with?
No, it's definitely not a one-time deal. We're in it for the long haul, and it's going to be a great opportunity for the Highland Brothers, along with my daughter and Final Rounds Promotion. This is definitely not a one-time deal. We are getting into the boxing sporting end of it, and we're hopefully going to be here for a very, very long time.
Now, Andy, when you say this is going to be a long journey for you guys to get involved in this, you and your daughter. So does this mean that now this is a sit down to go really look in depth into boxing, meaning going to check out fighters, almost matchmaking here a little bit?
Well, that would have to depend on, Nicole's other two partners in Final Rounds, and collectively with Nicole and Mike and Brian, they will pursue wherever they need to go to get who we may want to be fight on our ticket or join Team Snooki Boxing. We're very selective on who we're getting, you know, who they're bringing on board with it. And I just think with Mike Pascal's background and Brian Burke's background in the boxing sport, I think it's going to just be a perfect fit.
Now, let me ask you this here, because automatically, you know, as fight fans, we're hardcore boxing fans here. We covered the sport. Other people already, I don't know if you've read about it. Some people are not very, they don't know how to receive this yet. You know, they don't know whether if this is a gimmick or if this is something that's going to be solid. What do you say to those people, you know, that are not in full belief in what you guys are trying to do right now?
Well, I guess time is going to tell. I will definitely, without a doubt, 100% or 1,000% tell you, this is not a gimmick. It's not an entertainment end of a series or something like that. We are dead serious about this. We are looking to bring Patrick to a world championship. We're looking to bring his brothers to other levels. And the sky is going to be the limit to them. This is not a gimmick, and you know that there's positive press and there's negative press, and we'll deal with it accordingly. But we're in it for the haul, and it's definitely not any kind of a gimmick. We're trying to bring into the boxing field a little bit of Nicole's entertainment with her popularity. Plus, maybe get the boxing field involved in a little bit of the polls on the entertainment side. So we're taking the best of both of them, and hopefully gonna make something real well out of it. But it's definitely, for any of the people out there that are listening or saying that this is a gimmick, it's definitely not a gimmick. And on January 28th at Resorts in Atlantic City, you will definitely see that.
Well, brother, we wish you all the luck in the world. Just with that date alone, is there any other dates you guys have tackled on? I mean, or is that still in the works of getting other dates where you guys are going to have an event?
Right at the moment, we're focusing on our press release, and we're focusing on our fight for January 28th at, like I said, Resorts in Atlantic City. Mike and Brian are also working and have some other dates that they're starting to work on in the works. But right now, our main focus is on January 28th. If you really, really see the way this whole thing has unfolded on where the Highland Brothers have come to and the titles that they have won and where they're gone and where they hope to go here in the United States, the non-believers will become believers
in that. Well, definitely we always root for the underdog, so we're rooting for you guys here, and hopefully everything goes well. Thank you again for coming on Leaving the Ring. Much appreciated. I know it's late where you're at right now, and hope to speak to you again after your guys' event.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling, and thank you for letting us have the opportunity to speak to you and your all your fans and everybody that follow your show. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you, Andy. You take care.
All right. Thank you, sir. Take care. Bye.
There you go. Snooki Boxing, the father of Snooki, Andy, here talking about their event happening in Atlantic City Resort on January 28th with the Highland Brothers. Gotta thank Boricua Boxing for setting that up, you know. And I was curious about it, man, to tell you the truth. I wanted to kind of see a little more or less with where their mindset was at, and we got it, you know. Anyways, we didn't have a chance to listen to everything that happened.
We're going to need to get Snooki on here. That's it. Yeah. Boricua Boxing, they want to set it up, you know. We need the hard-hitting two-on-one. You know, Dave and Gabe versus Snooki, you know, what are you going to do to clean up boxing interviews?
She's going to put it. Oh, no, I don't think. I think they're going to probably protect her away from and leave it in the ring, you know. you know, though, what? I know folks are, you know, they're really kind of frowning on this. But at the same time, I'm like, look, hey, what if it does work out? It's good for us, you know. It might intrigue other celebrities to get involved with it. How far can she get with it? Well, if you're not into the business and you don't know anything about boxing, it's kind of hard. It's almost like it's almost like applying for a job and You've never been an engineer. You know what I mean? It's going to be a little bit difficult for them. But, hey, we wish them all the luck. And if you have the right team, things nothing's impossible. So we wish Snooki Boxing, her dad, and Final Round Promotions all the best. And if you want to catch their event, you can definitely go to Behind the Ring. It's for $9.99 on pay-per-view. Anyways, it's the end of our show, man. Thank you very much. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gable Montoya. 3 hours of boxing talk. We had Adrian Broner and Eloy Perez with Chris Pearson here on Leaving the Ring, and Andy Snooki's father, who was talking about their upcoming event. If you missed the show, you can catch it. It always comes on at least an hour after we log off. Anyways, have a good night. And oh, really quick, next week we're not having a show. Guess what? Me and Gabriel are going on vacation. We're taking a break. Just to let everybody know. Sure. Anyways, good night.
Peace. We're not taking a vacation together, just so you know.
Yeah. And I'll be, really quick, I'm going to be in Monterey on Sunday on the Ringside Studios as a guest co-host. So tune into that, too. I'll leave a link up on Twitter and on Facebook, man. Everybody have a good night.